Hello.
Hello.
Can you actually hear me?
Yes, I can. Is that
Oh
the
my
first
gosh.
time?
I know, it never works first time.
Hi, everyone.
Hey.
Hello. What's going on?
Episode 200.
When is that going to happen?
I thought that was today.
That's today!
I
Oh
think
my
that's today.
God!
What's today?
Episode 200.
Rob, you didn't realize that?
No.
Oh my God, he's messing with you.
Bullshit. That's all
Yeah,
I have to say.
that's exactly what that is.
It's been a bunch of IMs going back and forth. You've been reading them.
I came in halfway through his shenanigans.
There's no shenanigans.
He's the Rob who cried wolf.
Well, all I can say is none of us. Not even Mike has actually attended all 200 of these.
Well, I wasn't even around for the first.
Well, Mike's the closest. He's probably at like 197 or something
Right.
like that.
Mike's probably closest, yeah.
Yeah,
And then
nobody else is any close.
I'm furthest.
I
Yeah, you're
probably
furthest.
missed more than that. I probably missed like five or six episodes.
Yeah, but that's not much.
No.
Yeah, I have to keep the thing moving because you guys have lives. I don't, I guess.
I've definitely missed more, but I probably just by longevity have second most.
Yeah, probably. I would guess so too.
There
So
was
if
a
this was
while.
Marvel team up, Mike is Spidey and
And
I'd be Hulk. I did like four.
the
And Chris, you'd be the Torch. Didn't he team up with him a lot, especially
Oh
early on?
yeah, that's a
Yeah.
good call. I think he
Yeah.
was in a lot of them.
I don't know who you'd be, Rob.
Yeah,
You're somewhat.
but lately he's turned into more like Moondragon.
I don't know what I would be either.
I'm still the Human Torch. I'm just lost in the what's it called? Quantum zone or no, negative
Negative
zone.
zone.
Negative zone.
Yeah. I'll have to look up and see who the third highest MTU guy is, or gal. Who knows?
Yeah.
You could be like invisible. I don't know. I don't think feel like any of the female leads were used enough to have been the third most.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's probably like Iron Man or something.
Big boys club, you know.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, for the most part, I think it was pretty rare, especially in those 70s issues to have a female co-lead in those. Was
Yeah.
Aunt May the lead in Amazing Spider-Man or in Marvel Team-Up, the Assistant Editor's Month?
I don't know.
I thought
I
it
was
was
just saying.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, okay. I'll say if it was MTU, I could be Aunt May, and then we can just give Rob a Hulk since Hulk like had a few issues.
Wikipedia says that Aunt May headlined issue 137
Oh, there you go.
of MTU. All right, I'll take Cosmic Aunt May.
That's funny. I didn't realize until I started looking at this how that, like, at the beginning, it pretty much was Spider-Man and the Human Torch.
Oh yeah, it was like their series for a
The
while.
first, what well, was the first three issues, and then there's some others, and then Human Torch was back again. Just a few issues later, and wow, yeah, I had no idea.
He was
Human Torch is
Deadpool in
basically
those
Johnny
days.
Carson. He's Johnny Carson, basically.
Oh yeah. But he had that bromance with Spidey like they've done with
Oh,
Deadpool
they
recently.
still do. I mean,
Yeah.
for the most
Yeah.
part.
I like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's
Sure.
drawing in
Well,
its history, I think.
congratulations. 200 shows is, and honestly, Mike, we do have you to thank for keeping us going and keeping us on our toes and stuff like that, because I'm afraid what would have happened if you just bowed out altogether.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I grew the numbers just to keep the show going. I think I need at
I
least two more heads.
mean,
Well, I try to get Kirk, but he's praying for our souls right now.
I know.
the perseverance is particularly impressive when you consider that nobody listens to the show.
Kirk does.
Just kidding.
Well, no, I was gonna say everyone that I think you've turned all your listeners into co-hosts, Mike?
Yeah, so everybody that listens is on the show, or on one of the shows. That's right.
So if you want to do a podcast, it might just let know you've been listening to one of his shows.
Yeah, there you go. I would be able to tell you, because I don't look at numbers, so I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah, I kind of like having no idea, personally.
I think the thing was, it looks like the Thing and Iron Man teamed up with Spider-Man an awful lot, at least in those early issues.
Yeah, I thought Iron Man actually is on the cover of the first Essentials, maybe.
He's popping up. I'm only up to like issue 51, but I was looking, and yeah, he's showing up a lot. He's showing up more than Captain America.
Yeah.
More than the Hulk, even, it seems like.
Yeah,
Spidey was in every book, though, right? There isn't an issue where Spidey wasn't there, was there?
Yeah, there's a few.
Yeah, those are the Hulk
Human Torch
ones.
And somebody else.
Okay. Was it Human Torch? I thought it was Hulk that hosted them, but it was.
I mean, I'm only up to issue like 58, 59 I'm scrolling through, but yeah, I've already seen two or three Human Torch and somebody else.
Oh, I got you.
Rob's taken the long way about it, but right at the beginning of the Wikipedia article, it says there were six issues where the Human Torch headlined. So Human Torch and whoever else. There was four issues that the Hulk headlined with somebody else. And as I was saying before, there was one issue that Aunt May headlined.
So does it say who his most popular, most common guest stars were then?
No, I haven't found that yet.
Oh, okay.
And by I'm not going to keep looking for it.
I could be the not ready for primetime players from issue number 74.
Belushi?
Yep, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Jane Curtin, Bill Murray, Lorraine Newman. Yep.
It's funny. It's so weird that happened. It's one of those, I'm like, what a strange thing. It's like the David Letterman issue of Avengers.
Avengers, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird stuff.
That's how popular Saturday Night Live was when it first came out.
Yeah, that was late 70s, yeah.
They had some popular runs. They've had some duds where people lose traction, but they've had some good runs of characters. I mean, that Adam Sandler and Spade and all those guys, I mean, they became millionaires off of movies and stuff.
And then for me, like, before that, in the 80s, it was like Billy Crystal, Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo. That was like when I started watching. And now I'm so old, I have no idea who any of these people are. And I've watched Saturday Night Live and
during that time, it was like
30 years.
Eddie Murphy kind of held the show, I thought, during that period.
Yeah.
I mean,
I kind of learn of
the standout
SNL people now when they pop up somewhere else.
Yeah.
They become famous outside of the show, and then I found out that they were originally on SNL or
around
Kate SNL
McKinnon
or something.
And stuff like that. I end up like hearing her from other things.
Well, wasn't Elaine Benes from Seinfeld on there at one point?
She was on that Friday show, wasn't she?
Oh, was she? I thought she was. She was on one of those weird shows.
Yeah, I have no idea.
She was in the 80s also, I think. Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Well, they had a weird time where you had like Michael Anthony Hall and all those strange people. Iron Man was on there, I think.
Yeah, she was on it from 1982 to 1985 for three seasons.
And so she became huge in Seinfeld. I mean, she's gonna, all she has to do is nothing the rest of her life, because Seinfeld in syndication is on like 50 times a day, like on if not more on different stations like TBS and Comedy Central, and I think Netflix has it.
She has that option, but I would say she definitely is not taking that option. She's
She had that.
I would
that
say
show
she's
that
as,
of her own.
Yeah,
that was really well respected, and then Veep was hugely respected as a great comedy.
She was in Curb Your Enthusiasm too, playing the same character.
Yeah, the Gandolfini movie she did right after or right before he passed was really good too. She's one of those I appreciate, I think, much more now than I did when she was on Seinfeld.
I still appreciate her more for Seinfeld than anything. Because Seinfeld's a show I can watch every day and just not get sick of.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Same here.
The Office I can do the same thing with. Like I can just drop into the Office TV show just watch it.
The funny thing is, on our rewatch of Seinfeld when it came back to Netflix, is I realized what a dick she was. Elaine was like the freaking worst. You know?
What do you mean?
I think she's horrible.
She's not.
I think they're all horrible, and that's
that's
the whole point of the show.
They are not good. They're not good people.
One of the first ones on there.
None of them are good. They all have incredible flaws.
Yeah.
Like Jerry gets fixated on something stupid, like she eats her green beans with the fork, or like peas with the fork, and I just can't date anybody like that. Or she's got man hands, and that's all I can think about. So that's like everything, and then her toothbrush fell in the toilet bowl, and I can never kiss her again. You know, like it's like he has like an obsessive. George is just George.
George
is
bad too. Yeah.
I think George is the worst of the. As a human being, I think George is the worst.
I think George and Elaine are awfully close.
And Kramer's probably the best.
I would agree with that.
He's totally eccentric and weird, but he's not a bad person.
Right.
No,
he has his moments.
Yeah. He's brutally honest because he'll like walk in there, don't say anything about her nose, and he's like whoa!
He's almost like a child who doesn't know how to edit their thoughts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is about you saying that is George is apparently the one that's kind of representative of Larry David himself.
Yes.
Oh my God, I remember when we were watching Seinfeld actually on DVD, when I would buy the DVDs and then we watch all the like the extra features and stuff like that, and like they're interviewing Larry David, and you know he's bringing up something, like, you know, they have an idea for a plot line, you know, for George, and like I don't know if it's an executive or whatever, they're like, listen, Larry, this is we can't do this, like no person would actually behave in it like this in this situation. He goes,
well, I would.
That actually happened to me, and that's exactly how I behaved in real life.
I believe it, because I watched every single episode of Curb, and he is god awful. Like, he's the crudest human being on the planet. Like, you can't get any worse.
That's so funny. How did we get to talking about this? Oh, Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live.
Not right, from Marvel Team Up.
And Marvel Team Up,
which was from 200 episodes. Which we should say that, so we're each going to talk about 200 different things.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that this episode's probably going to be about approximately 16 days long.
You're actually going to beat you and Bill's podcast.
They're going to destroy that record.
Yeah.
Just going to take pee and food breaks.
Who said that?
It was just a joke, Mabel. And we're not really on the podcast.
It sounds like Mabel's like pulling on something.
I think she thinks, I don't know, she hears something outside or something.
Instead of two things, I brought two things.
It's
going to be a full house.
Yeah, I don't know if I've spent this long trying to figure out what I was going to pick this week, as I had something in my head and about doing issues that were 200, and I was like, the only one I knew I had is Avengers 200 right offhand, and that's a gross issue. I didn't want to do that one. And then I had one for Christmas, and I was like, well, if people listen to this after Christmas or in the future, I don't want to like put a holiday one on it. So, and if any of y'all did do a holiday one, that's awesome, because I love holiday comics, but.
Well, it is almost like an end of the year thing too. At least for me, it is.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I can record. I can do something next weekend, but I can't do anything beyond that.
Yeah, then we're getting into Christmas season. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's.
But
like,
I,
I think I'll be the last one for this year.
But I was thinking, should I do anything special? And I was like, nah, I'm just gonna. Do
I didn't
it.
Either.
I'm gonna stay.
I mean,
the.
They're meaningful to me, but they're.
I said I'm gonna stay the course because every episode is special to me. So there you go.
Stop.
Because it's with us, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I did do one that's special to me historically, and I did also did. I started the show doing a couple of weird books I remember, and so I picked two black and white explosion books. So at least I'll stick to how I came into the show, even though that was only like 3 months ago.
It's been longer than that, hasn't it?
I think it's been about a year. I think since I started doing it with you guys. Yeah.
I think I think over the course of this year, I've watched a lot of Charles Bronson movies. Like,
yeah, I think so.
I saw you posting one, maybe on Facebook.
Yeah, I've posted a lot of them, but I've been doing about three a week, I think.
That is a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you being punished somehow? Like, what's
going on? No, he's one of my action heroes. Kidding. Like,
I have nothing against him. I haven't watched. I probably only watched a handful of his movies.
I love him because he is not. I mean, well, his early movies, he's very built and very like Magnificent Seven. He's not a weird looking man, but when you get into most of his older career, he's got a scrawny mustache. It's not even trimmed like to the same length. Like he has no trimmer, so he doesn't know how to trim it.
Uh-huh.
He's got hair that looks like a mop. It just sits on there. He's got sideburns that are different lengths. He often has like when he's looking at the sniper, he often has to swish his hair out of the way because it's like in his eyes half the time.
But he's
not the biggest like action guy. Like you don't see him running or doing like these huge fight scenes that look badass. He's just a macho badass dude. Like he just see, even Mabel agrees.
Yes, she does. Yeah. I always think of True Romance and Gary Oldman when Christian Slater comes in there. He's just like, motherfucking Charlie Bronson. You know, I always think of True Romance whenever I hear his name. Like just a dude with a big gun that pops in and starts taking care of business, you know?
Yeah, and I've been fortunate.
I was looking at like Death Wish, the first Death Wish. He was already like 53 years old. So
And there's one woman that I'm tracking, like in a lot of his movies. I forget what the actress's name is. His wife. It's Jill Ireland. So it's like I was like, man, this I was watching two movies, one and she's a hooker and one of she's a wife of somebody else's, and I was like, man, the chemistry between these two is incredible. Like I was like, I'd be surprised if they weren't married. And they were. I went and looked up and they were married.
I love the bit in the canon feature, was it the Electric Boogaloo or whatever, where he's talking about the Charlie Bronson is like almost 90% of the budget for his movies were his paycheck. And that's why those canon ones are so cheap. He would just come in, do his bits, then leave the set. And then they'd have to just throw the rest of it together.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of canon films and they're pretty awesome. Like I could really appreciate the low budgetness of it too. Cause it doesn't like make the movie bad. Like they can film whatever they need to film. It still has like some major explosions and gunfights, you know?
Yep.
Like so they film whatever they need to do and make it look good, and it's still a good standalone movie.
Well, it's like he was saying, I think he was like 60 by the time he was doing those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he just come in, do his shtick and go home to Jill, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is something I miss about movies nowadays, as opposed to like the 70s and 80s, is, you know, you could be a movie star back then, like a leading actor or actress, and just kind of be, maybe it was more true for the men than the women, but you could just be like just an average looking person. All you had to be is just a good actor, you know.
Right.
You didn't need to be attractive or whatever.
Yeah, you really see the difference, though. Like, if you look at careers of actors and actresses, how women are treated differently. Like, they have shorter spans. I mean, there are some exceptions, but they have
There are a few, right. There are,
shorter
but those are
expanse.
the exceptions. Yeah.
Yeah. If you really look into it, you'll see that, and you're like, well, why is that? Like, why can't they age into it just like the men? They just like I think Bronson became more popular with his when he has the signature mustache and hairstyle than when he wasn't.
Certainly for people our age, I don't know about anyone else, but that's the only way that I know him.
Like
Yeah.
he was in The Great Escape, Magnificent Seven. I mean, a lot of earlier films that were big, like big movies at the time. So, like, yeah, and I've been doing that, and I've been trying to watch more Burt Reynolds films, but unfortunately, a lot of his aren't streaming. Whereas, like, most of the Charles Bronson films I can get on Amazon Prime. Just it's part of their service, so.
Nice.
Just a lucky and I had watched all the Death Wishes like last year, so
Yeah.
for on my streaming services, and that went across like three or four streaming services to watch them all.
You know what I watched the other day? I'm not covering this by any means, but I think Joe, you brought it up. We watched The Sting last
Oh
night.
yeah,
Me
nice.
and Stacy did. Yeah. So yeah, very good. Yeah. First time for both of us. So that was fun.
I need to see that again. It's one of those like when you really discover films, like in maybe as a teenager or whatever, like the classics. And back in my day, it would have been going to the video store. And just I remember watching so many of those in such a 2 to 3 year time frame. I really need to go back and revisit some of the ones that I haven't seen in, at this point, probably like 30 years almost.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one of them I'd like to revisit because I don't know how long it's been since I've seen it. But,
You know, I wonder, like, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. But at this part stage of my life, it's not any it wasn't anything new, if you
sure.
know what I mean. It's like it was very clear to me that, like, very quickly that, oh, there's Robert Redford and I forgot his name, but James Earl Jones' dad are working together in this scam at the beginning, and
Right.
then, like, at the end, it's like, oh yeah, no, he's not really, like, he's not really going against Paul Newman and stuff like it, because I've seen stuff like that so many times in the past,
Right.
whereas, maybe if I had seen it when I was much younger, it would have been like, oh wow, I've never seen something like this kind of twist before,
And that's one of those things I think is interesting when you go back and watch old movies is like, you're like, oh, I've seen this 100 times before, but maybe when that was made, this was only maybe the second or third time, or even the first time it's ever been done, so it wasn't as much of
Exactly
a
right.
trope. Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
So
exactly right.
it's hard to be like in almost 50 or in your 50s, I think, and always watch with fresh eyes.
Right.
It's hard.
Yeah,
Yeah.
pretty much impossible at this point.
Mike, I just remembered the first time I remember seeing Charlie Bronson, though. That was in Dirty Dozen. That's probably the first Charles Bronson movie I
Yeah,
ever
I
watched.
that's one I still need to catch. I need to catch more of his. They have a lot of his older films, but not a lot of his. I mean, I don't think they have that one. I think they have The Great Escape or something, but not that
Okay.
one.
Yeah, Dirty Dozen's a classic. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. Like I didn't. A lot of his older stuff just is not available. I'm sure it'll cycle in at some point. I just gotta stay the course and wait. I was very patient with a lot of things, and I'm doing that with the Marilyn Monroe films too. Like, I watched what I could, and then I'm just waiting for them to show up.
Yeah. Speaking of great films, we watched the Milli Vanilli documentary over the course of a couple of days, and I want to get, since this is retro, what did y'all think when you found out that Milli Vanilli didn't do their albums? Did you care, and did
No,
you immediately burn their CD or tape or whatever you had?
I didn't have anything, and I didn't care.
I didn't have anything, and I didn't care either, because
it's outside of my normal scope of music. So it really, like, it was almost like, oh yeah, that figures.
I mean, I'm aware of their two hits because of MTV, but like, I didn't really care. I'm the same as Rob. It wasn't my music, so.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
I wasn't old enough yet to know what my music was.
Right.
So, I was still pretty young. So I was
old, Mike.
Well, yeah,
what,
I think
what,
you got
what year did they hit? In the 80s?
They hit around...
No, it was the 90s.
It was like 88, 89.
Late 80s, 90s.
Yeah, and I think 90 was when the story broke that they hadn't sung the music.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I mean, if you think about it, I was already in college. I didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I was in middle school and high school, so it was like definitely my era.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't even... I started high school in 94, so... Yeah.
I wasn't
young.
Even a glimmer in my father's eyes.
I didn't even know what music was yet.
Right. That said, it was a good documentary, and it made me think about it. I was like, if the record's good, who gives a shit what the face on the front looks like? It's like, why do we care? You know,
well, I think it was more of a point where they were taking credit for.
Oh yeah.
Other people that were, you know, how come those people weren't up there?
Well, that was all because of the producer is what you learn is, and right. he had done it previously. And the funny thing is he does it after. So after they get disbanded, he brings in the real quote Milli Vanilli, makes an album. And he still had people who are fronting on videos that weren't actually singing. So it was the producer's shtick.
I mean, I kind of understand where they came from because they were in that era where image was everything.
Right.
And like these were really good singers, but they probably knew they couldn't like market them.
Yeah. Or dance. Maybe they couldn't, I mean, they had to be able to dance
whatever,
on Club MTV
at
that point.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, that's kind of what made their image is their looks and the way they moved, right?
Yep. Exactly.
So I get it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they probably would have just
auto-tuned,
done everything auto-tuned.
Yep,
and,
it wouldn't have mattered.
Digital and stuff like that. It's like, you guys look good and you can dance. Yep. That's all we need.
The funny thing is, you know, the one guy passed away because he had an overdose. He pretty much went downhill after. But the other one, it seems like he's had a really good life, and they had him at a fair or carnival concert, whatever, you know, and he's singing. Live a cappella, and he sounds almost like Barry Manilow to me is the funny thing. I was like, the guy you had rapping, you should have probably actually had singing to begin with, and maybe none of this shit ever would have even happened. You know?
Yeah.
He might not could have rapped, but he's actually a really good singer. It's just kind of funny. So
yeah, it is.
What a weird, tragic, bizarre story, and yeah, it only could have happened in the 80s.
Yeah,
I just
so
think
that
it's
other
so
guy,
funny.
He didn't kill himself? I thought he committed suicide.
It was an overdose of drugs and alcohol.
So
it could have been
suicide.
It could have been, but it might not have been.
Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, some overdoses are accidental, but some are just kind of indirect suicides, you could kind of say.
Right,
but
yeah.
His story is really sad either way.
Yeah, exactly. So
obviously,
speaking of bands, this is the year, like I'm 54 and I've seen the most concerts I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I mean, I saw Third Eye Blind. I saw Blue October. I saw Three Dog Night. I saw REO Speedwagon. Cheap Trick. I mean, there's a couple others I can't even think of, but I have
in
seen
one year,
so
wow.
all this year. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen that many in a year since college.
Yeah. Blue October, I just saw. They were amazing. They were amazing.
I used to go to a lot of concerts, but.
Me too.
They don't appeal to me. Every time I do kind of think, that would be kind of, you know, I never saw them and it would be nice to say that I did. And I look at the ticket prices, I'm like, no thanks.
Oh my God.
Well, that's why I like doing what I'm doing because I don't have to drive to Denver to see the concerts because these have been all local and they're playing in a venue for old people like me.
Mm-hmm.
like it's not, there's chairs everywhere. It's not like, yes, people do stand, but I sit in the like the mezzanine and on the fr in the front row for almost every concert, and I just chill out like an old man watching music. So it's pretty cool.
So,
I'm
Chris, I
telling
don't
you,
know if
we
you
should.
saw that the Red Hot Chili Peppers are coming to Darien Lake.
I
One of my
think I
friends
did.
is a very big fan of theirs. And honestly, if they came to the arena, I would think about it depending on the price.
Right.
But that's actually part of my story. So Darien Lake is an outdoor, it's an amusement park that also has a concert area, it's outdoor venue.
It's like our Red Rocks.
At least as far as I'm concerned, they're notorious for if you choose not to leave before the concert is over, you are going to be in that parking lot for 2 hours,
Right.
at least. So anyhow, my friend like pulled up the ticket prices, and this were for regular. They have regular seating, they have lawn seats. So she was looking at regular seating, $170.
Oh, yeah.
It's for an
Yeah.
outdoor venue. It's
Yeah.
not even in an arena, and. I just, she posted on Twitter, I just responded with just like a gif of a guy just laughing and laughing and laughing. I'm like, I'm not sure I would go if they said that they'd pay me $100 to go to that venue. It's awful.
That's
But
not even the worst, though. Like, I mean, that's not even the most expensive I've seen.
no, but
Well,
they're
let
insanely
me tell
priced.
you the
Everything's insanely priced these days.
let me tell you the Taylor Swift story, okay? So Barb's a huge Taylor Swift fan. I don't really
Oh,
care
really?
for
She
her.
is too.
Yeah, and
She is too.
she didn't get tickets the first round. So they were playing at where the Broncos play. I don't know what it's called now, but I'll say Mile High because people know it as Mile High. It's called something else now, but
Safeco at one point or some
yeah,
shit.
I don't know what it is.
Invesco Field? Is that what it was? Invesco.
Well, they keep changing it, but it'll always be Mile High,
Sure.
I guess. So she was playing there, and we had tickets, and they were like way in the nosebleed seats. Like,
You had tickets?
yeah, we have tickets to go see Taylor Swift. I don't like
Oh,
Taylor
you?
Swift
Oh, it hasn't
personally,
start come
but
yet?
no, they've already come. But let me finish the story. So
Uh-huh.
Barb says, "I don't want to
Jeez,
go." So
Brad.
I'm excited. Sorry.
Barb finally said, "You know, they're so far up, I don't really want to go." So I s okay, what are we gonna do with them? Look, these are Taylor Swift concert tickets. So we said, "Oh, let's give them to our niece." So we call my brother and say, "Do you want to go to the Taylor Swift concert?" And she says, "No, I'm not into her anymore." And then so Barb says, "I'm gonna put them on sale." Okay, so she bought them for like $100 and some a piece, right? We ended up turning around each ticket for like $2,000.
I'm not surprised to hear
No,
that at
no,
all.
two, no, two tickets for $4,000, pretty
Yes, I'm
much.
not surprised.
And
Yeah,
they
it's
sold.
insane.
They sold, no questions asked. Like it was boom.
That is a good
And they
deal. What
were
comic books are you
way.
getting?
I
She
was just saying that
averaged.
paid for 1 month of DCBS, right?
You should get a really expensive comic.
Yeah, I should. No, that's Barb, so.
Oh, that's Barb.
Oh
But she should get you a really
no,
expensive
but
comic.
it ends up in the same pool. Like, we have this philosophy where we just buy what we want when we want, so we don't
Right.
like I unless it's like a house or a car, we don't really
Right,
have to discuss it. It just does.
Yeah.
Well,
Well, she
I did
especially
put
doesn't
with
have to discuss it.
she was coming to Toronto, not Barb, Taylor Swift,
Right.
and you had to put in for like the privilege of maybe being selected to be able to buy tickets.
Yeah, that's the way it was here. Yeah.
Okay, so I did do that just on the off chance I wanted to. I wanted to see what the prices were for the cheapest tickets, but I wasn't selected. But if they were cheap, I would have gotten them if Stacy wanted to go.
The weird thing is, we wouldn't have got them either because she did the same thing you did, right? She wasn't selected in the first round. But remember that big old Ticketmaster fiasco with Taylor Swift?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it opened up a second round of tickets, and that's how she got those tickets.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah,
I
there was no
learned.
second round in Toronto, but at least not that
But
I know
you
of.
saw a band that I absolutely love, like Depeche Mode. Like we had tickets for them when we were moving out here. So I think it was like 90, 94 is when we came to Colorado. So I think it was the summer of 94 or 95. And Depeche Mode was playing it. I think they were playing at Mile High again. I can't remember where they were playing. Either that or Red Rocks or Fiddler's Green. But they were playing somewhere. I think it was an indoor thing because of the way they do stuff, right?
But, yeah, so like the Pepsi Center
and
something.
So we bought tickets for my brother and his best friend, too. So they drove up from Albuquerque, and then they were going to stay with us. And then we were going to go to the concert. Well, the night before the concert, they canceled. And I'm fuck. So
that sucks.
Yeah, there's two concerts that canceled on us. Them and the Counting Crows that we wanted to really see. And we never seen them
Counting
since.
Crows always cancel, Mike.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't
Back
know.
Back in the 90s, we went to go see them, and I think the Wallflowers? Maybe, but anyhow,
it tracks.
They had to cancel too, something with his voice. And I can't remember who stepped up. There was another band, I guess, in the area that actually ended up just showing up. And
Bare Naked Ladies?
It might have been Bare Naked
Ladies. I've seen them twice. They're really good. Bare Naked Ladies.
Bare Naked Ladies
really
were
good.
Fabulous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw them with the Wallflowers.
Their singers were there. I find that they're.
Yeah,
one-note songs now that they just have.
Well, no,
one
when,
guy's
when they had both guys there before the other guy had that drug problem, they were on top of their game, man. Both those guys, because
it was a fantastic concert every time.
To me, they're like Blink-182. I know you guys probably don't like them, but Blink-182, it has to be both of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Tom and Mark, they have to both sing. Well, it's the same way with the Bare Naked Ladies. Those,
I agree.
They lose their identity when they lost the other guy. Like they might as well have called themselves like Angels and Airwaves or something because
it's not the same. We saw Stephen Page, the singer guy that left. Did I tell you we saw him this past summer?
No.
Okay, yeah, he was playing at just one of those very small venues and stuff like that, playing with his own backup band. And so he sings 80% of, the Bare Naked Lady songs that he sang, and then, of course, his own solo stuff as well. I am telling you, every time, if I have a choice between Bare Naked Ladies and seeing him, every time I will pick him. It was like almost like seeing the Bare Naked Ladies again.
Well, he was the primary front, I think.
Yeah. Same sense of humor and stuff.
Right,
I think they
lost their identity with him. And they
I do.
I mean, they've had problems with other members. Like one guy got cancer and they had to deal with that and they've had some other band problems, but they're pretty awesome.
I would love to see them get back together. Even if they don't want to get back together permanently, go on a tour or something together.
Yeah, there was a lot of money involved. Like, I think there's a lot of bitterness because when that guy fell apart, they were hitting it in with Disney. So they, they lost a huge, money grab.
They did. You're right.
It was a huge money grab. And I think they're just, very bitter towards him,
It might have softened recently. They were together for receiving some sort of Canadian musical group honor or something like that. So I could see them, even if they didn't want to stay together always, that maybe do a few things together again.
Yeah, I could see them playing at a venue like where I go to when they reunite and they're 70 years old again. I've been seeing a lot of 70-year-old singers. I mean,
where you're you and Barb are the youngest people in the crowd.
Well, for Three Dog Night, I can guarantee it.
See,
bruh.
But Three Dog Night, the guy's like 77 or close to 80. He might
for
even
Depeche
be.
For Depeche Mode, I felt like a spring chicken. There was a lot of people like this in their 60s at the concert.
Yeah, well, you are kind of young when they hit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And Kristen discovered them when she was in her teens, and they were already probably 15 years old by the time Kristen discovered them. So she's about four years younger than me.
Who's a big Depeche Mode fan here besides me?
She's the biggest one. And,
well, what's your favorite album? Just out of curiosity.
Mine? After having re-listened to everything recently, I can never remember the name of it. It's the one that's got, crap. What's the one that's got, is it Music for the Masses is my favorite.
Oh, okay. There's, mine is Black yeah. Celebration.
Black Celebration is
awfully
pretty
good. Oh my God, I love that one. But
then
that's
probably my second favorite.
I love
one.
The one with People Are People too, and Blasphemous Rumors. Blasphemous Rumors
is fabulous.
The lyrics to that song are just so ingrained in me. Like, the irony of it, right? It's like, I just love the lyrics to Blasphemous Rumors. I know a lot of religious people hate it, but it means something. You know,
their first album's a little bit of a weird listen where it's hit and miss, but pretty much after the one guy leaves, all the way up through, like, what was the album that had, like, I Feel You on it? Like, I don't think there's a bad,
was it Violator?
There's a bad, there's not a bad record
after
between
that?
Them.
The one after Violator.
It's after Violator. Songs to something.
Songs of Faith and Devotion.
Yeah.
Yep. So, like, their second album through that, they're pretty much. They hit
on fire. Well, isn't the guy that quit the Erasure guy?
Vincent
Clarke.
That first album's really poppy. Some of it's good, some of it I don't
like. Well, you could see why the Erasure guy leaving.
Oh, totally.
He took his style over to Erasure, right? Because that's like really poppy, new wave. And then they became they became a darker band for sure.
Yeah. And I think a better band.
Well, David Gahan and what is it, Martin Gore? Those are that is pretty much Depeche Mode.
Their new album's really good too. They did about half a dozen songs off of it, and I really like it as well.
I've even gotten their solo stuff. Like Martin Gore and David Gahan did some solo albums. They're really good.
I don't think I've heard those. I'll have to look it up.
They're good. I think you'd like them if you're a fan.
Before we forget about Taylor, I do want to say one thing. As a person, I know we got one babe in the woods with us. The rest of us are old farts. But as a almost 50-year-old, we saw Taylor at the movie theater, and we saw Beyonce at the movie theater. And I hope all big shows go that way from now on, because spending $20 to be able to park and use the toilet and get to food easily, and then get out of the theater in like 15 steps.
How long were you stuck in the parking lot?
I mean, I was in the parking lot for 2 minutes.
Right?
And you pay $20, so you're paying more than a movie ticket, but it's a good experience. And I don't know. I really enjoyed both those concerts. Like, you get to see everything. $120 and kind of seeing stuff.
Yeah, I think I would check it out if it was somebody that I cared for. But
We took Jack to see Beyonce.
I like Taylor Swift, and God, I've tried. Like, because Barb likes her so much.
Yeah.
Like, I like her as a person.
That's how I am.
Like her music. I swear, I try to listen to it. Like. Because Barb will be singing every lyric, and I just try to listen to it, and I can't get into it at all. And there's not too many singers I've tried and not been able to get into. And I don't know if it's what it is. I think I'm just too old. I don't know.
And that's fine. But like, you know what the thing is there, and that's what I was telling some other people who are they're more like out of touch with this type of stuff. You know, I'm getting it with the kids and with Stacy. She likes Taylor Swift. And I'm like, there are a lot of other, like, in the past pop stars that, like, young kids or young girls, like, go crazy over. A lot of worse ones that they could pick than Taylor Swift.
She's
a 32-year-old woman that's been around for over 10 years and never been more popular than she is this year. And, I mean, my God, she got her start like when she was a teenager writing songs for other artists. Talented person.
She is beautiful too. Like, she's gorgeous.
She doesn't do anything for me, but that's fine.
Yeah,
and that is fine.
Yeah, Rob's like, she's
speaking
no
of beautiful
she's
women,
no
though,
no Millie Vanilli, but I like her anyway.
I don't know what I thought about Beyonce before we took Jack to that show, but I tell you, as a human being, she is one amazing individual. We watched it, and just the kind of bullshit she has to put up with, where people are second guessing her and everything else. And there's like a section of it. She's like, I just end up every day exhausted because people keep telling me things aren't possible, and then it'll show her like on camera, like, so I'd like to do this. And they're like, well, they don't make a wide enough lens. And she's like, well, actually, I was researching it, and they can, if you get this lens, it'll work. And just people like naysayer all the time. And she's like, we need, actually, I've looked into it. You can do this. So please get it done.
Wow. Like, that's very interesting.
I think you described the experience of most women.
Exactly. That's my point, though, Chris, is like, if someone who's probably one of the biggest,
but
stars
in
the
not,
world, and she's having to put up with that shit.
But I don't know if I can see people saying that to Taylor Swift right now in her career, saying, oh, no, we can't do it. I think, yes, ma'am, we will get that done.
I think you would have thought.
There's always exceptions, but I'm saying, like, most people. But, she's dealt with, I don't know much about her, but she's clearly dealt with a lot of crap in her career, the same thing. I mean, she's re-recording her own albums right now because she lost all the she lost rights to all the masters or whatever.
Yeah, she did.
But
yeah, it's one of those things. Maybe Rob too. The fact that she's a black woman might be playing into
it
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, race is still a huge issue in this country.
Yeah, even if it's not intentional.
Yeah. So
it could be subconscious, you know.
But yeah, she's a bad woman. I was really impressed with her. I mean, she put on a hell of a show. So
I hope they'll succeed though, because anything to help the theaters stay alive.
Most definitely.
I'm for, because I love the theater experience. Like, I go every week. I went this week to see Silent Night.
How was that?
It was pretty good. It's a John Woo film. Have you heard about it?
I saw your post, and that's the only time I had heard of it.
They didn't really advertise it, but what it is it's like a Punisher story, right? Guy loses his son, and then goes on a vengeful thing during Christmas Eve, slaughtering gangs. So, yeah.
That sounds like a Charlie Bronson movie.
Well, it has the guy who played Rick Flagg in the Suicide Squad movies in it. Yeah. He's in The Killing, too. He's good. I like him.
Yeah, me too. Dang, John Cena did him wrong, man.
I like John Cena.
No, I'm talking about when he kills him in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
No, I like John Cena a lot. I was talking about him at work yesterday, how funny he was, you know, before he's getting like big roles, but when he was just getting like the bit parts in Trainwreck and where he's like the drug dealer in Sisters, he's freaking hilarious.
Well, one thing he works really good is he's a good action hero, right? And he's also has like this sense of humor that is that comes across on the screen and usually hits.
Yeah.
Like those Vacation Friends or whatever that he's in, those are pretty funny.
I loved Peacemaker.
Peacemaker was great.
I'll take that over anything Marvel has done for Disney Plus.
Me too.
In a heartbeat.
Me too. But I'm biased towards DC. So
yeah. I think DC, if they would stick with that kind of filmmaking, I mean, I know you can't do it like every time with like Batman and Superman, but if they could almost make just like a Mystery Men / Suicide Squad type TV universe, I think it'd be a hell of a lot of fun. You know,
yeah,
bring in Ambush Bug or something. I don't know,
that'd be awesome.
They have their own Deadpool right in front of them, and they didn't use them.
Yeah, well, we ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's what that pause means.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, we're preparing.
I got one. So this will be the one that does have a little bit of history for me. So, Boris the Bear number one from 1986 Dark Horse is probably one of my earliest Well, in the old days, you wouldn't have called Whitman Comics or Archie Independent Comics. So I'm not going to, you might consider Archie Independent now, but back in those days, I wouldn't have. But so this was probably the first independent comic I owned. And it was also probably one of my earliest exposures to a lot of the characters that are in here. So this was $1.50 in 1986, and it was written by, what's the guy's name? The art's by James Dean Smith, and Mike Richardson did the story. So basically, I mean, Mike Richardson is the big cheese over at Dark Horse, isn't he?
Yeah.
He was. Yeah. He sold it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, just recently.
So basically, this is in your black and white boom. This is going to be dealing with all the different characters that came out during that era. So the big front says Boris the Bear slaughters the teenage radioactive black belt mutant ninja critters. So James Dean Smith, apparently, and Mike Richardson were just really tired of all the variations of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that were coming out. And so they decided to make a book about a bear who's going to go through and take care of cleaning up the comics industry. So you start in Boris's bear house, and treehouse, and he's reading comics. And the first one he picks up is Puerile Phosphorescent Pugilistic Prairie Dogs. He tosses that one. The next one is Beardless Breeder Reactor Boxing Bobcats. He didn't like that one. So the next one's Immature Isotopic Internecine Inchworms. And he's just furious, and he just rips everything to shreds. So he stomps outside, and he sees his friend Dave, and he says, "Morning, Dave. Morning, Boris." And he's like, "You want to go to the comic book shop with me?" And he's like, "No." And he's like, "Boris always wants to go to the comic book shop. Something's wrong." So Boris sneaks down into the basement in the house, and he comes out with an Uzi. So apparently Dave has like a bunch of weapons down in his basement. So he goes out to find prey, if you will, and the first thing he sees is a rabbit with a sword. I wonder who that's supposed to be. So he says, "Is this a radioactive mutant? I'm not sure, but he's definitely a funny animal." And you see the rabbit like slash a panda in the guts, and he tries to talk to him, and he says, "Are you a mutant? Are you radioactive?" And the rabbit doesn't respond because, you know, he speaks Japanese. He probably doesn't know what Boris is saying. I think it's funny that you buy into comics when you read them, right? And it's one of those things you try not to think too hard about. But really, if Boris walked like 10 feet, would he really find Usagi Yojimbo like just in a field? Probably not. But like I said, and probably shouldn't think too hard about it. So he shoots Usagi, and he said, "Well, at least he was funny sometimes, and he was well drawn." And then you see a certain aardvark out in the woods, and instead of Cerberus, they're calling him Slobberus. And Boris shoots him. Slobberus runs away and gets on the phone. And then Boris shoots him in the head. But before he gets shot, Slobberus was able to make a phone call. And he has called the Tampa Mice. I think that was, what was that one? Hamster Vice, maybe? That it's a play on. I can't remember. I don't know all of these black and white books because there was
that. That sounds right. Yeah, it was like it was a playoff of Miami Vice.
Right. And yeah, the one guy's got kind of like the curly hair, and the other one's got the jacket and the sleeves pushed up. So I think they're definitely supposed to be playing off Miami Vice. He kills them, and then he runs into four guys, Leo, Mikey, Donnie, and Bob. And they say, "You can tell us apart because we carry different weapons. We're the juvenile, deviant, hard-shelled assassins."
And this that's is a playoff of the Power Rangers.
It is. So he kicks the first turtle and he knocks his eyeballs out. This is what really sold this book to me as a kid, because it's super gory and violent. Just everything a sixth grader wants to be reading. So he knocks his eyeballs out. The next he punches in the mouth and like gore everywhere. The one turtle's like trying to find his eyes, and he finds rocks, and finally Boris puts him out of his misery. He grabs basically who's supposed to be Donatello. Shakes him, pulls him out of a shell, and splats him into the ground. So one after another, he's killed him off, and then it shows him making basically turtle soup, because you see all these shells laying around, and he's got a big bowl that he's cooking of food. Then we run into Ambush Bug, which I don't get that one because Ambush Bug was never an animal, but maybe it's just he was a funny comic in that era, but whatever. He tracks Ambush Bug down, scares him. He jumps into a trash can. He shoots him, and ew, he's gross. The next one they have is a bunch of kind of like dog-looking things. I don't know these ones at all. It says they're the fledgling fluoroscopic brownie button rodents. I have no idea who these guys are supposed to be. They all kind of have like a Goofy meets Snoopy look to them. So if anybody knows who they are, he kills them too. And he kills them pretty brutally. What's up?
I have no guess there.
Yeah, me neither. It says that he's cooking them with hamster helper, if that helps anybody, but I don't know. So he said this is taking too long, so he decides to have an open house, and he advertises free beer. Top Dog answers the phone saying, I'm going with free suds, I wouldn't miss it for the world. Then you see Splinter, he says, sure, I'm going. Now that the boys are gone, I could use some company. And then the Ewoks are on the phones like, I'm going to tell Mr. Lucas. He's like, yeah, we'll be there, don't worry. And there's a huge spread. You've got Flaming Carrot, Rubber Duck from Captain Carrot. Looks like one of the Smurfs, Thunder Bunny, one of the Mad Guys, which is just random. So he's just throwing all sorts of Easter eggs in here. Nervous Rex, Opus from Bloom County, a really drunken Woody Woodpecker, and Garfield. And so he crashes through. And he just starts shooting everybody, and he shoots Peter Parker. Drat, my last costume ruined. Does this mean I'm missing in action? And he shoots Rubber Ducky through the eyes, and it hits Captain Carrot. There goes my miniseries. Ewoks, George, help. The Smurf gets shot. Oh, Smurf. Nervous Rex, I'm extinct. He says to Droopy, you can go, I like you. And then Droopy goes, thanks, bub. He kills Felix and Woody Woodpecker, Thunder Bunny. Oh, I say that smarts, is what Chippendale says. He even shoots the little baby from Tom and Jerry. That seems wrong. He blows up the head of the Roadrunner right when Wiley says, I finally caught him. And he shoots the duck bill off of Daffy and says, you're despicable. And finally, he came and said, Dave shows up, his owner, and says, what are you doing? How could you do this? You killed all these cute critters. Some of them were my favorites. Well, maybe not my favorites, Boris, but this is murder. And Boris says, no, Dave, this is justice. Sure, it was messy and some innocents were caught in the crossfire, but it was a job that needed to be done. Imagine what would have happened in the future if I hadn't. Dave says, I guess you're right. One day there would have been as many animal books as there are superheroes. He said, sorry, Dave, I've got one last thing to do. They're the worst group in the whole bunch. And you see the Care Bears coming around the corner with his Uzi. And so he's going to kill off the Care Bears, and that's going to be it. So in the epilogue is he's back in the treehouse looking at the comic books. And he pulls out a comic and says, hey, this is great. This is what I call entertainment. And, of course, he's reading Boris the Bear number one. So there you go. That was Boris the Bear from Dark Horse Comics. They have an ad for a t-shirt, only $9.95 plus $1.
That's 50. A good price for a t-shirt.
It is. And $1.50 shipping and handling. You can't beat that.
Order me one, will you?
All right. I want one. Comics trivia by Richardson and Stradley. Did you know that Jack the King Kermit's Demon was patterned after a character who had appeared in comics 35 years earlier? Did y'all guys know that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came from Prince Valiant. There was a demon. There was someone who used a disguise from goose skin to make themselves look like a demon. And then it says, did you know there was also a fourth Captain Marvel? MF Enterprises introduced their own Captain Marvel who shot off body parts. That sounds weird. So didn't read that one. But anyway, like I say, one of my earliest exposures to independent comics, and probably some of my earliest I definitely did not know who Usagi Yojimbo was when I read that, or Cerebus. And probably I would have known who the Turtles were, but it probably was my first time reading anything with the Turtles in them, even if
get the humor of it? Or I mean, because it's poking at things that were already existing.
I don't know that I did. I knew who, like, anybody who was on TV was, you know, like I knew who Woody Woodpecker, and but it was just gory, and you know that appeals to a sixth grader. You know, you're what, I don't know, 86. I would have been like 12. I mean, that's a perfect kind of comic for a 12-year-old.
Oh, it's just gross and
violent.
Look at all this guns. Yeah.
Right. And rereading it slaughter. Now, you get the humor of, you know, he was saying, like, this industry's gotten ridiculous. The turtles launched. And then there's, like, all these different variations. Like, there's the gerbils and the hamsters and the preteen Dirty Jean Kung Fu Kangaroos, which was always my favorite one to say. Yeah, it really exploded for a while.
Very I've read like two issues. I don't know which ones I have, but they were very humorous for sure.
A Boris the Bear?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
don't have a lot of them.
I don't think I have
number one. I don't think.
They're fun. Like there's one where he tackles the Thunder Agents. He has a Man of Steel tribute issue. There's the second issue, which was a really good one, is about all the Transformers and Robotech and all that kind of stuff that was popular in the 80s. There's a Punisher one, ElfQuest one. So yeah, I mean, he spoofed all the stuff that was hot at the time. It was a fun book.
Nice. Wants to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
All right. So my two choices I just picked up like on Friday. So I was going through this box and I was in a hurry too because I had to get home. But I was going through this box and I was like at the comic shop and I was like, wow, this is a box of stuff I've never heard of. You know, a couple of things I did hear of, like I grabbed a Betty Page out of there and some X-Mutant Solo, which me and Bill had just talked about. But I saw this book called Galaxina, I guess is how you'd pronounce it. And I had no idea what it was. It's from Aerosol, which is like a Malibu imprint, and has Tom Mason as the editor talking about it. But what I learned is, the two things I'm talking about today just coincidentally have the, like, I didn't know the connection between the two things. One's published by Aerosol, one's by Dark Horse, but they have a connection in the fact of it's a magazine that by Hugh Hefner that's real popular called Playboy. So this is by Mike Shoemaker, and I think it is really early work from Leonard Kirk. Everybody knows who Leonard Kirk is, right? The art is spot on, but this is about a Playboy model, Dorothy Stratton. She was in the movie called the same name, Galaxina. And I got to check out the movie now to see if it's streaming anywhere. It debuted in 1980. It's become like a pop cult film, a popular cult film. And they even based a movie on the actress or the Playboy model Stratton called Star 80. I remember seeing Star 80 when I was in high school, I think, and I really didn't really give a shit about Star 80. I just wanted to see it because I knew it had a lot of nudity. And so this is recommended for mature readers, but there really is not any nudity or any more violence that you'd see in a typical comic. So I don't know why it was. Maybe the movie is rated R, but this had no like rated R material in it. So this takes place. So Galaxina is an android. She's a robot. You don't learn that until halfway through the story, and she's traveling with this space guy named Roger, and they land on a planet of dinosaurs, and it's pretty much them trying to survive these dinosaurs. And the art has some really nice panels on this right here. There's an ad for H.P. Lovecraft's The Lurking Fear. Every time I see anything from Adventure Comics, Aerosol, or Malibu that's prior to Ultraverse, because I already have all the Ultraverse stuff, I snap it up because I just amazed by it. It's pretty much Roger on this stranded planet falling in love for a robot, and he's real hesitant to do that because he's like, I know this isn't real. I don't want to have sex with a robot. And they're after another guy that's on the planet. I don't remember what his name is. Sinclair. So this guy's a bad dude, and they're after him. They're trying to capture him because he has their technology that he wants. And they find a bunch of creatures. They start hanging out with a creature that kind of looks like Sleestak, but a lot smaller. So if you've ever seen The Land of the Lost, and you know what the Sleestak look like, that's what these creatures look like. They're upright lizard people. And he sort of becomes a sidekick along with this. And his people are going to roast and eat Sinclair. And they capture Roger as well. And they're going to also kill him. But Galaxina comes to the rescue, saves them, frees them. They do kill Sinclair, and they're off on their next mission. And there are 4 issues of this. And it had a really cool ad for something I'm really interested in buying, which I didn't know about. It's called Smokehouse 5 by Sergio Aragonés. It looks like it's a magazine of some sort. But about firefighters, and I'm totally interested in it if I can find it or track it down. That's one thing I'd like. But it is very cool too. It has an ad for Evil Ernie, the first appearance. I've been really trying to look for this, at least an affordable, bad condition copy, because I really want the first appearance of Evil Ernie, but I haven't been able to find it. For something that I'm really to pay for, but this is an ad for that first issue. It says
And
Evil
that was put
Ernie.
out by Aircell, the
This
Evil
was
Ernie was.
Put out by Eternity.
Oh, okay.
It says Evil Ernie is the most twisted horror character since Freddy Krueger.
Nice.
By somebody in Fangoria, by Brian Polito and Stephen Hughes. And I think what at the time, Malibu was like publishing Adventure, Eternity, like all the di like they were a distributor as well
Yeah.
as like Malibu distributed Image Comics for the first 2 years, I think,
Right.
before they distributed them themselves. So yeah, this was a really fascinating thing, and I think this actress was killed. I didn't
Yeah,
really
that's what
go into.
Star 80 is about.
Yeah.
She was
By a stalker, right? By a fan?
no, her former husband.
Or her husband?
He was like involved. I think I'm trying to remember his name, that famous actor plays Eric Roberts plays her plays him in the movie. But he
Yeah,
was
it's been a
like,
while since I've seen it, 'cause when I was just a kid and I just wanted to see it for the nudity.
yeah, she met him when she was young, and he was like one that kind of convinced her to do the whole Playboy thing and stuff. And
Yeah.
then but he was like really controlling, and when she tried to like break away from him and his abuse, she was gonna be in a movie, and she got involved with Peter Bogdanovich, you know, that director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like taken with her, and I think that was, I mean, the movie sensationalizes it a bit, I think, but he was yeah, he this Paul guy that was her, she was formerly married to, well, they don't know exactly what happened because he shot himself after he did whatever he did to her, but they think that he raped and murdered her before he killed himself. And it's just really weird that Peter Bogdanovich ended up marrying her sister.
That is weird. I want to go see Star 80 again just to refresh my memory along with this movie, so
Know who's
might.
in that movie? Keenan Ivory Wayans.
No
Oh
way.
yeah.
Yeah, he plays the
Well,
comic.
who's the actress that plays her though?
Mariel
She's.
Hemingway.
Oh
I'm looking at it right
yeah,
now.
that's what it is, Hemingway. Like I know her. I just couldn't picture her name. I wanted to say it, but I couldn't.
I don't think I'd heard of this until maybe this year or maybe last year. They talked about it on the Quentin Tarantino podcast. They covered Star 80, and that's the first time I had heard of all this stuff. Yeah, it's
the first time I heard about it is right now.
Well, there you go.
I had watched Star 80, but I knew nothing about this Galaxina. Like, I knew nothing. Like, I didn't know it existed or what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really well done. Like, if you're a fan of Leonard Kirk, you could not tell that it's Leonard Kirk, but his black and white lines are really fine and crisp and looks really cool. That's all I had for that.
Chris, do you want to go?
Either way, I can go next because we're talking about movies and I have movies to talk about again.
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
So both the movies I have are connected by an actor from the movies that I talked about last time. So I was kind of led to these movies by those movies. The first one, the connection was Ken Takakura, who was the main detective in Black Rain that the American detectives worked with and connected with, and Michael Douglas had, you know, kind of his relationship throughout the film with, like, not getting along with initially and eventually getting together to work on the case. So this was one of his other prominent American films that I did not know about until I was looking into his background, and it's called Mr. Baseball. Have you guys ever seen this?
No, I've heard of it.
Is that Tom Selleck?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, Tom Selleck.
Yeah, I have watched that.
Yeah, so it's from 1992. It's a sports comedy. Apart from the fact that Ken Takakura is in it, the thing that kind of similar to Black Rain that interests me was that a lot of it was filmed in Japan, and apparently a lot of the cultural differences that are not, well, not so much cultural difference, but the it's still apparently an accurate depiction of Japanese baseball and how it differs from American baseball. I don't know how true this is, but I read that that's still sometimes shown to American baseball players if they're heading over to play in Japan. Yeah, it plays. It stars Tom Selleck as a New York Yankee. And as often happens, he's a first baseman slugger, as first basemen tend to be. And there's a new rookie coming up that is going to replace him. And the manager calls him in and tells him, you know, there's only, you know, if he wants to continue his career, there's only one team that's interested in him. And that is the Chunichi Dragons of Nagoya, Japan. So he doesn't have much in his life going on besides baseball. And so despite his lack of interest in going to Japan, he does. It is a very predictable film. There's nothing surprising. Some of the comedy's dumb. I did laugh a couple times. But I did, like I said, enjoy the look at Japanese baseball and the filming locations in Nagoya. That's where most of it was filmed, with a little bit done here and there. The Chunichi Dragons are an actual Japanese baseball team, which I thought was cool. You know, just like he plays for the Yankees, and stuff. They didn't use imitation teams, which I thought was cool. So they play other Japanese, real Japanese baseball teams. You know, obviously they're actors in the uniforms, but they're, you know,
they're actual teams. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The Giants, which are one of the most famous Japanese baseball teams, are kind of their big rival in the film, and naturally the film ends with like big game and stuff, and that's against them. I would say most of the humor is pretty sensitive. You know, it's kind of like Black Rain, although even more so. Some of it is at Selleck's expense, and he's pretty ignorant of Japanese culture and not too respectful of it at first. But now if you watch the trailer for the film, you would not get that impression, which I checked that out on the DVD after watching the movie. I think it does try to sell it as making fun of the Japanese a little bit, but I didn't find the actual film to be doing that too much. And it is a co-production with Japan, and like I said, they must have had a fair level of cooperation, given that it's the actual Chunichi Dragons that he plays for. And there was some obvious but amusing things, and it all ultimately hinges on him coming to show respect for Japanese culture. And like I said, it was very predictable, but like Black Rain, you know, I like the narrative of two parties being at odds and coming to find a common ground. So there's a scene where he finally shows humility and gives a speech to the team in broken Japanese that he's rehearsed with his translator, that I actually thought was really cool. It is mostly a comedy. There's a love interest with a Japanese woman that I didn't find real convincing. Overall, it was fun. I like baseball. I like Japan. It was an easy watch to put on while I was folding laundry.
Now you need to go watch the Bad News Bears Go to Japan.
Oh. Yeah.
You like baseball, you like Japan. It's an earlier take. Definitely go back a decade. Well, actually, it's more than a decade.
I knew about the Bad News Bears, but I don't think I realized about that film.
Yeah, it is interesting because it does deal with a little bit about their culture, too.
The film has a 6% rating.
Yeah.
On Rotten Tomatoes.
But how do you know Jackie what it is Earl. if you don't experience it?
No, you know, I know, for but yourself. That is remarkable. That 6% is pretty damn low. Jackie Earl Haley, who is in the movie, considers it the worst movie ever made.
Oh my god, that's hilarious! Now I have to see it.
Yeah,
it's not too bad.
He's
not
the bad
too bad.
Who was always smoking, right?
Yeah, he's the adult. Yeah. He's Rorschach.
He's Rorschach, yeah.
I know,
yeah,
so
but
funny,
he's the little kid who's always smoking in Bad News Bears, though, I think. Yeah.
He's the adult. Well,
yeah, he's a little bit older.
Well, in Breaking Training, they don't even have an adult. They have to lie to go to the Astrodome to play, like the team that they're going to play. And he's kind of like the adult of the group. But he's really almost like the same age. It's just that he smokes and drives, and I don't even think he has a license. But but in this one, a Japanese sponsor gets them, a big United States sponsor gets them to go to Japan to play in a competitive baseball league. They don't have Tanner anymore. So Tanner's the foul-mouthed kid.
Yeah.
And the actors, yeah. Like, I think for a couple of them did change, except for Jackie. I don't think the movie's that bad, but I'm a fan of the Bad News Bears. So, like, I just saw it on Pluto just recently. And I was folding laundry. No, there you go. I saw it at the theater too, because my parents were big fans of the Bad News Bears back in the day. So we went to go see it at the theater. All three of them, I think. Well, not the first one. The first one, I was too young to see a theater.
I was gonna say that.
But Breaking Training, I definitely remember seeing at the theater in the one they go to Japan. It's definitely the worst of the bunch. I will say that, but you probably could guess that from the 6%.
Yeah.
I like the original Bad News Bears.
Me too.
You know, the remake isn't that bad either. The one with Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, Billy Bob Thornton. I've never seen that one.
It's not bad.
I love Walter Matthau, though. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he was...
Talking about actors that don't have to be attractive, when the actors didn't have to be attractive.
What are you saying?
I'm saying if a basset hound became a human being, it would probably be Walter Matthau.
No, but you're doing ageism there, because when Walter Matthau was old, well, younger, he wasn't that ugly.
Yeah, I mean, Mike,
he just became ugly with age. No, if you look at his younger pictures, he wasn't
a handsome young man.
He didn't look grumpy old men, you know, like or Bad News Bears.
Yeah, I mean, despite my joking, I wouldn't call him ugly. I just wouldn't say he was star attractive.
Just a regular looking person.
Just a regular looking guy, yeah. Which you could get away with.
I want to see the Odd Couple movie again.
Have you guys ever seen Sunshine Boys?
Oh my God, I was waiting for somebody to pause so I could bring that one up.
Yeah, it's one of the best movies I think I've ever seen.
Enter! So good.
He's screaming it out the window as George Burns is leaving.
It's so funny.
Oh my God, me and Stacey do quotes of that all the time.
I want to go watch it as soon as we get done, but I got to go take pictures with the family. Maybe after.
If you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend The Sunshine Boys, starring Walter Matthau and George Burns.
It's great.
I haven't seen that, but you know what's a Walter Matthau movie that is kind of unusual for him is Charlie Varrick.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's from like the early 70s, where he plays like a former stunt pilot, and it's like a crime film.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like,
what is it called?
Charlie Varrick, V-A-R-R-I-C-K.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's not at all a comedy at all. He's like a, you know, like a quasi detective. Tough guy in it, and it's pretty good actually.
Well, he was very good in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. The original.
If you got a doo-doo rhyme, then come see.
Oh my gosh, that was in my head too. I'm very in tune with you fellas today.
I think so.
I just Beastie Boy lyrics. I have like their entire catalog stuck in my head permanently.
That's cool. I'm gonna have to put this on my. On my list to watch, Charlie Varrick.
Yeah, I wonder if any of these are streaming.
You have to buy it from
the Sunshine Boys. Isn't? I just looked it up.
What? You know what? I'm going to the mailbox. I'm mailing my DVD. Just mail it back when you're done.
That's like Netflix. You're the new Netflix.
I'm the new Netflix.
I'm sure it'll come back on the streaming. I usually wait like six months, and they're in there.
Mr. Baseball wasn't streaming, but I got it from the library.
Speaking of not relying on your digital stuff, Chris, you might have heard. I don't know if anyone else had. You guys heard about all the stuff that was being removed from PlayStation? If you Like, I guess if you've used it for.
Yeah, but did you
I've
see
never
what...
used it to buy any TV but, shows or movies.
But
no,
did you see what was being removed?
Stuff. It's like, I guess, like, the entire Discovery catalog.
Yeah, Discovery
they lost
catalogs.
The license.
No,
so
it's
if
just.
If you bought
it's...
all of that stuff, it's gone.
That's messed up.
Well, they don't have the license to allow you to watch it anymore.
Who bought so Discovery stuff? I don't know. Sorry, I don't mean to be unsympathetic, but who bought a ton of Discovery?
Hey, Naked and Afraid is awesome.
PlayStation,
but on your PlayStation,
and you had every Shark Week special ever on your PlayStation. That shit is gone now.
I wouldn't think it's a huge like. I don't think a lot of people did that.
I don't think it's a huge number of people, but if you did, you're just not. You know what it is? It just shows you that like all of this is subject to, you know, deals that huge companies make with other huge companies, and if they expire and no longer valid, you could have so-called bought anything, but
in reality, if I bought something on the PlayStation to watch Shark Week or Naked and Afraid. I wouldn't go back to rewatch it.
Yeah, that's another good point.
It's just like not. It's like you're buying it just so you can continue the next episode or something. Like,
bro,
yeah, I want to know what's
watch
going on.
Flip or Flop before they broke up. You can't do it now. Those seasons you purchased have been purged.
I just don't personally see like. When the article came out, it was like more of a big deal because I was like, okay, man, they're going to lose their movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I went, and that's how people were treating the article because they were retweeting it. They didn't even.
Like,
oh my God, they're going to lose it. Here's why I tell you, you should buy your physical movies this way. And I was like, well, none of them are movies, dude. You should go check. You should go check out what's in the article.
Yeah.
People don't read the article.
I am while I'm streaming. Get out of here.
I am happy that music every once in a while I will do something stream, but I still buy most of my show. I'm happy to buy most of my movies and stuff like that just for. Like what you're saying in the Sunshine Boys, like I might just be in the mood to watch it, and,
right?
You know, it might not be available, and I just like having this stuff. I guess I don't know.
I think what's weird to me is like I feel like I've always known this. I don't know what's a surprise about it. Like
a lot of people aren't very savvy with that stuff, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't buy movies or films or anything like that digitally, or if I do, I like Mike said, I buy it because I want to. I basically feel like I'm renting it anyway, so I'm buying it because I want to watch it right then, and it's only a few bucks or something.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And I think like I don't think of it like, is that a good price to own this? I think, is that a good price to watch this right now? And is it worth it to me to spend like a few bucks to just to watch it this one time? And technically, yeah, I still own it, but like. I never thought of it that way. I do think I don't think it's a good thing. I think it does kind of suck, but like, I also was like kind of confused why it was as big of a story as it was. Like, I thought it was just already kind of understood, you know, really want to own something, get physical media.
I think one that reared it said yesterday that I hadn't thought about in forever is singles. Because, you know, for years, you know, you bought the CD for a single and then you would buy it on iTunes or what have you. And I remember there was a handful of songs that, like on iTunes, you could not get unless you bought the entire album.
Right. Yeah.
And I hadn't thought of that in years. But last night we were watching Nightmare Before Christmas because Henry had never seen it. And I was telling him, he was like, do you like the music? I was like, you know, there's a Fiona Apple version of Sally's song that's really, really good. I should play it for you. And I pull up Spotify and they don't have it. And I pull up Apple Music and they don't have it. And I pull up Amazon. You have to purchase the entire album just to play the song. I was like, I was like, you know, this shouldn't shock me because I've seen this before, but I haven't seen it in so long.
Right.
that I forgot that that was something that they do, where they'll have, like, you can't have this little chestnut unless you give us $12, you know?
And anything on anything on the cloud, I don't think there's no guarantee.
Most definitely.
Because somebody could lose their company, or somebody could do something and then change something that we don't even know what the legal contracts are, and you just can't get it anymore. They probably had that crap, I would think, like lawyer speak, when you purchase that stuff on the PlayStation. Yeah.
It's probably
like,
on their.
It just had no. Who's gonna actually sit there and read it, right? They're gonna want to watch. I'm gonna watch the shark episode, so I want to go do that. And I watch it and I'm done with it. The chances are you're never gonna see it again unless you have a friend come over and I want you to see this shark bite this person. Like,
that song I double checked. It was in my liked list on Spotify, but it's blacked out now. So
yeah, not there.
You can't play it anymore.
Well,
find it anywhere, Joe?
You could. I was able to play it to him through for him through YouTube. Like somebody illegally uploaded it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that was the only way. Last that we have.
Yeah.
Well, I have Apple Music subscription, and since I bought that, I haven't bought physical. Like, just because
but that's my point. 90%
of the time, I can listen to everything that I want to listen to, and maybe the other 10%. Like if I want to go see it, especially with soundtracks and stuff, like those might not exist, but you can compile a soundtrack if you can download each individual single.
See, I buy all the CDs then, and if it's a full CD or just some of the songs, whatever the case may be, I upload it onto my iPhone.
I used to do that
I make my own.
Like 2,000 CDs I don't listen to anymore. That's what changed my mind.
Yeah.
And I have a library of shit. I mean, I must have like 6,000 DVDs, and I haven't popped one into the DVD player in years.
Wow.
So.
Do you have a CD player in your car?
Not anymore, because...
Okay. I do.
But I still listen to them a lot
in the car.
But I did buy a what do you call it? A USB, a Bluetooth, CD player, and I bought a cassette tape player that also is Bluetooth, so I could play my cassette tapes.
I know, like De La Soul, you couldn't listen to them for years, except for the most recent albums. So I had gotten rid of mine when, you know, I'd switched over to like streaming and digital, and then we had multiple computer crashes. I don't even know where some of those iTunes libraries are, if they even exist for me anymore. And I was happy to buy the physical copies this year, so I finally am able to listen to those legally and easily again. So I still think for bands I really care about, I still want to have a physical copy.
I think we still have about 6 cassette tape players in the house. They're all like, you know, boombox type things that have other things, but they all have tapes and, you know, multiple CD players for sure. We're still very physical. We're definitely one of the few, though, because I think I told you guys the last time that, like, we had 2 copies of the same movie and trying to give it away.
Let me just tell you this. Not so much with the CD technology, but the tape technology. If you want to keep it working, you should play it every now and then, because I let mine go for like 10 years and it won't play anymore. So.
Oh, you mean the actual tape deck?
Well, yeah, the hardware.
Okay.
The tape works fine. I have a stereo system still that has like the 6 CD changer on the top.
Yeah, me too.
And then it's got the 2 cassettes below. Neither cassette player works anymore.
Wow.
Is all I'm saying.
I've mine probably 10 years, so I wonder.
And I would say the same thing with the VCR.
Yeah.
You should run it every now and then if you have it.
We don't have any hooked up anymore. The only ones I have is down in the basement that we just don't use it anymore.
It's probably going to die on you.
I've got one, and one of the two died exactly like you're saying, Mike. We tried to watch something on it, and it just died.
I thought they would last forever, and then I was like, God, there's a couple of cassette tapes I have that are like friends, like local bands from New Mexico that I'll never get another digital copy from again.
Well, you know what you could do? You could take it to one of those places that will transfer it for you.
You do it at our library. We do that what do you call it? Like on USBs, put it on a memory stick for you.
That's always a possibility.
Yep.
Wow, Rob, you're up.
Woohoo!
Oh, I haven't done one, have I?
Nope. No.
What the heck?
Do you want to skip your turn or what?
No, I got one right here. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
So I decided to pick this one. So this was my early era of going to the comic book store and like, oh my God, there's a store that just sells comics. I'm not even sure if I was aware that this series was still going on until I went to the comic book store because I had gotten miscellaneous issues in convenience stores, drug stores, and then I went to the comic shop. I said, oh, they're still producing Star Wars. Marvel's still making Star Wars comic books. So I remember this one. I picked it up, and then I bought it to the end. This one is number 86. And then I went every month, and I have 86 to 107 until they canceled it.
You know what? Those are the expensive ones, too.
Yeah, I know.
No, because they weren't printing as many copies as...
They weren't selling anymore. Yeah.
They weren't selling anymore, so... Those are all double digits, if not triple digits, towards the end.
Yeah, so I was very pleasantly surprised I don't remember what date this came out, but that I'm like, oh, Star Wars is still out, you know. The movies have been over for a little bit, and you know, let me see what they're doing with these comics. And I had enough interest that I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I guess this is 84, so maybe about a year or so after Return of the Jedi. And so I kept sticking with it. And so this one has a stormtrooper leaning over a cliff, and he's holding on to Princess Leia with one hand, saying, still feeling high and mighty, princess. So what happens in this one is Princess Leia is going to go on a mission to a small planet, and I guess for like a diplomatic type thing, trying to get them this particular group of aliens on the rebellion side rather than the Empire side, and I guess they're not very consequential. But her point is that she wants to show that they're not like the Empire, that everyone's important. So she wants to reach out to the small star system. Luke is running after her saying, you know, you can't go by yourself. And she's like, I am. And finally, convinces her to take an emergency signal beacon. So if she runs into any trouble, she can go ahead and at least call for help, because she's not even bringing a blaster or anything, because this is just strictly diplomatic. So she, gets picked up by one of the, aliens of this particular race, which is called the Yinkor. And, several hours later, they get to the planet, and they're going to rendezvous with the Elder Council there so she can meet up with them and form a relationship. So they're just about there. They advise her. They're just about there when the pilot says to the commander that their escort has arrived, and it's two TIE fighters. And so she of course, freaks out, and he says, sorry, but, they've taken our council hostage, and they're willing to give them back if we turn it over. So we really have no choice. And so she's not surprised about the Empire's treachery. But 2 seconds later, the TIE fighters start firing on the ship. So these Yincor are very shocked, and Leia basically says, you know, you guys were stupid. You know, they're not going to keep their word. They have, you know, they've gotten you to bring me down here, and they just want me dead. So they're gonna blow you guys up to get to me, and then they'll kill your elder council too, because they have no need of you. So she runs to the gunner's cockpit, and she starts trying to fire back, and sure enough, she blows up one of the TIE fighters. The other one is still on their tail, and the pilot's trying to maneuver, but it really doesn't have the training that the Imperial stormtroopers do, and it's gaining on them. And Leia fires and wings the last of the TIE fighters just as the TIE fighter hits the rear engine of Leia's ship. So they both end up going down. She, as the thing's about to crash, she hits her signal beacon, hoping that somehow it ends up reaching the Rebel fleet. And then it crashes, and she gets knocked out. We cut back to the Rebel fleet, and somebody calls over to Skywalker that the signal that they asked him to track is going off. So, okay, there's trouble. And he, Lando, and Chewbacca. Oh, this was set before the events of Return of the Jedi, as I had mentioned. I should say that because Lando, Chewbacca, and Luke jump into the Falcon to come to the rescue. So that was just a real quick cut. And then you see the Imperials are set up. This is like a desert planet, and they have these Yincor, these Elder Consuls, held hostage. And they get the senior guy there, Governor Wessel, is given an update saying that they're reporting that the shuttle was downed. And however, both of the fighters were shot down too. So he's like, We're going to where this happened. I need to see for myself that there's been no survivors and that Princess Leia is dead. So we go back to the TIE fighter that had crashed, and you see the stormtrooper is up and alive, and he's dazed, but he's walking across the desert, and he stumbles upon the shuttle, and he goes and he takes a look. And his orders were to kill all on board. And he sees that the Yincor are dead. And then he turns and he sees that the one, the person on there is Leia. And he didn't anticipate it was going to be her. Just as she's waking up, he's actually got like a huge staff in his hand. And she kind of ducks and says, "Oh, you know, wouldn't shooting me be faster?" And he's like, "You know what, if you know, not that you know, need to believe me, but I was actually trying to free you." And so he frees her, and he's like, "Why are you doing this?" And it's like, "You tell me, do I look familiar?" And she doesn't recognize him. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm from Alderaan too. I was just a common servant, but why would a princess, you know, remember a servant?" And so she starts laying into him for serving the Empire, and he's like, "You know, I didn't, Alderaan never did anything for me. Like, you know, the Empire, you know, gave me a job, gave me, you know, food in my belly and, you know, clothes on my back and so on and so forth." So he actually frees her and is going to take her back, to the governor, when these two strange creatures, huge, huge monsters, come. And they realize they have to work together, obviously. So he goes to shoot the creature. It hits him, actually then grabs him by the leg with its teeth and is trying to kill him. He drops the blaster, and Leia grabs it and briefly thinks, "Well, maybe I could just, you know, shoot him. He's only a stormtrooper after all, and then I could escape." But, you know, she's like, "But he is from Alderaan, and he had the chance to kill me and didn't." So she shoots the monster and makes him let go, and they go running in the opposite direction. Meanwhile, Luke and team are getting closer and closer, as is the governor and his troops, to this signal from the pilot, the stormtrooper's helmet. Now, those monsters are still chasing down the Stormtrooper and Leia, and they come to a cliff's edge, just like on the cover. They both say, okay, we've got no choice. We're going to have to jump. She tells the Stormtrooper to jump first, which she does on an outcropping down below. She jumps next. The weight was enough of the two of them that it starts to give way, and she actually falls. And he quickly dives down and grabs her by the arm, pulls her back up, and they agree that they actually make a pretty good team, and it's too bad they're on different sides. So they start talking some more, and he shows her that he actually has a small piece of Alderaan on a chain around his neck, and he calls it a souvenir, which really, really pisses Leia off, because she's like, it's a symbol for the murder of millions of people. And, you know, he gives the line of how he's just a soldier and he's just following his orders and stuff. And so they argue enough that finally that's it. You know, he puts his helmet back on, because this whole time he's been chatting, it was off, puts it back on, says, Leia Organa, you're a prisoner of the Empire, come. I must find my superiors and turn you in. And so they go marching off. Luke and team end up getting to the planet and now searching around. The governor and his team on their craft have now made it into the general area, and off in the distance, sure enough, they see the Stormtrooper and with Leia as a hostage. So he brings her right to Leia and says, okay, great. You know, we're all set. We can dispose of the Elder Council, and then you're next. And the Stormtrooper's like, wait a minute, I thought you were going to question her. And he's like, what? We don't need anything from her. Like, every second she's alive, she's a danger. And then just as he says danger, the Millennium Falcon blows up the craft that the Imperials were using. So Luke and team to the rescue. They open up the hatch down below while the Falcon's still in flight, hovering. And Luke peeks out and says, you know, run for it. So she does. The governor orders the Stormtrooper to shoot, and the Stormtrooper goes to reach for his blaster. Now, his necklace, since he pulled it out, is still around his neck on the outside of his uniform, outside of his armor. And when he goes to reach for the bend down to reach for the blaster, he actually rips the necklace off, and it's in his hand, and it kind of makes him, you know, think twice before he decides whether or not he's going to shoot. So he stops, he takes a pause, and makes the Governor Wessel grab his blaster, and he's going to shoot Leia. And instead, the Stormtrooper, you know, tells him to stop, and that, you know, he's going to shoot him if he shoots Leia. So Leia says, you know, come with me, you know, quickly, you know, we can get out of here together. So she jumps up, Luke grabs her, the Stormtrooper's right behind, and says, you know, he's with us. And just as he grabs Leia's hand and they're about to take off, the rest of the Stormtroopers start firing and manage to hit and kill the Stormtrooper that was with Leia, and he falls. And that's the end. They pull Leia up, they close the hatch and fly off, and Leia's just crying and looks in her hand, and she's got the necklace with the piece of Alderaan. So yeah, this was my first reintroduction in the Star Wars comics after probably, I'd say, around the Empire Strikes Back era, like issue 39 or 40. So yeah, it was cool to back then to go back to a comic book store and say, oh, they're still making Star Wars comics. And
do you feel? Did you have a full run of Star Wars or no?
Not even close, Mike. I've got that 86 up, and then before that,
but you got the final issue, right?
Yeah, I do. I just I have, it's very hit or miss of Star Wars comics. Actually,
so you started getting them when they were coming down in sales. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because I would just, like, you know, go to a drugstore, convenience store, and I pick up what was there. Like I said, that my first comic ever was Star Wars 19. I bought like issue 26. Appeared on the stands. It was like, that's how it was. It was like, for whatever reason, the corner store was like hit or miss with. They did carry Star Wars. Like issue 39 was then came in, and I never went back to fill in any holes. So I really have more missing than I have.
Yeah, it'd be one that I'd like to fill for sure at some point.
I bought those. What are they called? The long time ago omnibuses from Dark Horse and did a complete read of it.
Oh, right, did you?
Before, yeah, right before it went to Marvel. And
how many of those did they publish?
I think it was five.
Okay, I only have the first two.
Yeah,
I have the three omnibuses. So
yeah, it's those late issues are actually some of my favorite ones.
I thought they were good because they were no longer beholden to what was going on in the in the movies. Right, they were just like, okay, just do whatever you want.
Because as far as they knew, it was a dead universe, basically.
Yeah.
Filmically, anyway. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was good stuff. I like those.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
All right, can go if people are ready.
Yep. We're ready.
This one, it kind of was inspired by some of your reading, Mike. This is one I had and then I lost or got rid of. I think I've told the story about my move to Denver. A, I sold off a bunch of books, and B, they lost a box of my books. So sometimes I'll be like, I thought I had Turok number whatever, and then it was in the box that went missing, or it could have been one I had sold. I know for a fact I used to have this issue because they used to have these Mile High ads, 50-cent comics, 75-cent comics, dollar comics. And once every 2 years as a kid, I would do one of those orders, and it was, and you know, it'd take like 3 months sometimes for the box to even show up. So this is one I ordered off one of those 50 centers, and it has re-entered my collection when I repurchased it last year, and that is Fat Ninja number 1 by Silver Wolf. And this is from 1986 once again. Cover inks were actually done by somebody that I know Mike likes, Mr. Tim Vigil. And the rest of the book is Christopher Silver on writing and Gary Amaro. So there you go.
So there's honestly Silver is the guy that does grips, guys. So
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that this is the same, and I'm assuming that's where the, you know, the company name Silver Wolf came from.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there's a Grips ad actually on the back page. Silver Wolf Comics presents Chris Silver and Tim Vigil Grips, Nowhere to Escape and Die. So, but yeah, 1986, pretty basic setup. You've got a ninja and he is overweight. So he's running around sneaking.
Inspired by Herbie, right?
I believe so. Yeah, he's got a very much a Herbie look.
A Herbie with those lollipops.
Right. Well, on the cover, it's got a bunch of dead chefs. He's got a drumstick in one hand and a bloody knife and a bloody katana in the other one. So yeah.
Or so, if you want to say he looks like Engelberger from the Bad News Bears.
But yeah, I remember ordering it off the 50-cent list just because I'm like, I like ninjas. I'm fat. This will be fun, you know. So that's why I ordered this book. But you know, anyway, so he's running downtown. He is hungry, so he runs into the side of a lunch wagon and he busts it open. He gorges himself, and he loves food. The concept of food seduces him. Where it grows, how it has to be prepared, the sources of his favorites, and then disaster strikes. Someone pulls the plug on the great energy-giving source to the makers of food. Everything grinds to a halt. Nothing grows. Animals cease to breed, and food stores dwindle. So it's got a giant, like, space refrigerator that's been unplugged. And, you know, it's got that kind of Star Wars used technology look to it, and it's just floating in outer space. So his job is there's no longer food. He's freaking out. He doesn't know what to do. He busts into a grocery store and he's told there's no food. He's despaired. He feels defeat, and it shows him going door to door, town to town, looking for something to eat. He's tried all of his favorites, which he's preyed upon. It shows a hamburger joint, a restaurant. There's an eat here sign. He's found no food, and now he has nothing but an empty stomach and despair. So he sees a man, and the old man is, I don't know what it means. It says, the old man is a fat ninja's kind, but he is dying. I don't know if that means he was a ninja or he used to be overweight, but anyway. He says, the shadow, he knows the answer. Find him, and he'll tell you who pulled the plug. And then the man dies. So he's going to go find the shadow and figure out what happened to the world's food. You see a bunch of, like, what do they call those? Onomatopoeias, like the words where they're just kind of drawn. And then he sees the shadow. And it's basically just a kind of a generic outline with long, scraggly hair and a scythe. And so he's fighting the shadow, and he's hoping to be a worthy opponent. And there's just a few pages of a fight scene. And finally, as dawn approaches, the shadow flees, leaving Fat Ninja along with his thoughts and his old friends. So he goes back to the dead body, and it has several close-ups of him kind of staring at the dead body. And he's very hungry. And I'm here, I'm reading it this morning, I'm thinking, is he about to eat the old dude or what? And I'm like, if you're that hungry and there's no food left in the world, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, right? But he didn't. He says he's going to find the shadow. He starts hunting in the alleys. And he runs into the rough section of the neighborhoods. He goes to the dumps and slums. And finally he goes to an old church. And that's where he finds the shadow. So he follows the shadow up a flight of stairs. They're fighting again. And he says, come to your death, fat fool. Strike harder, my fatness. And I apologize. This is not a pro-overweight book. So, you know, it's kind of done for laughs because that's the way we treated obesity back in the old days. It's not very body positive. But he gets to a room and he's cornered by the shadow. And he realizes his error. He's been herded like a side of beef to the slaughter. Shadow has led him into a well-planned trap. And there is another ninja. She's got a glowing sword. And next issue, Between the Light and the Darkness. Be here in 30 days. And then it's got a thing on the back page says Fat Grams. I guess that's what they're going to call the letters page. And he says that he's been trying for 9 months to get this book published, and he's finally got the first three ready to go, and Silver Wolf is going to publish them. And then the next page, I thought this was super interesting, especially for people who are interested in original art. The pages for each of the pages of the book are available. The cover has actually already sold, but most of the pages are about $35. There's a couple of double page spreads, page 2 and 3, page 30 and 31 are $150, and there's a handful of pages that are $75 a piece. And I'm like, I thought that was really interesting at that point that for the original art, they were already thinking of selling it. And I don't know, 1986, $35 for a page of art. I don't know. It seems pricey for me for this.
That's what I was going to say. Like, yeah. It seems very pricey for something called Fat Ninja.
Oh, right.
I could see if it was like Grips and you had like Tim V. Hill, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. That was Fat Ninja. And it was, I'll be honest with you, at rereading it, I'm like, I bet this was one I probably had in the sale pile. It's pretty mediocre, but it's always
buying the art like that has the Kirk all over it, man.
Yeah.
Because he would send away for stuff like nobody's business.
He would. He probably ordered those $9.95 prints of the original. Because that was the other thing they had in sale on there. $9.95, you can get a print of the original art. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Kirk had sent away for the cover. But yeah, it was what it was. It was fine, but you know, I would not recommend following up on it. I don't need any more Fat Ninja in my life.
No.
I would like to have all of the silver stuff.
There's five issues of that one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I like Grips. I'm still trying to finish my Grips Volume 2. I've read all of Volume 1 plus the Greater Mercury comics.
I was just about to ask, was that Greater Mercury?
It sounds like Silver sort of went bankrupt and he let that Silver Wolf and the other company after it go under. Yeah. And then came up with Greater Mercury comics with somebody else so he could do comics and still have let that other company go. It's so weird.
Yeah, the follow-up issues, there's two more issues of Fat Ninja after the original five, and yeah, those are at Greater Mercury, so
yeah.
So the friends went over there with him, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. So my next one is called Flaxen. It's from Dark Horse. I didn't know what this was. I just know it had a Steve Rude cover. And I guess the actor, the Playboy model Susie Owens owns a wolf. And the dog that's drawn on the cover of Flaxen number one is her wolf. So didn't know that until I read some of the back matter. So this is a pretty simplistic story. It's by Mark Evanier, and the illustrator is Richard Howell. It does have Steve Rude on the cover and pinups by Sergio Aragonés, John Romita, Steve Rude, and Dan Spiegel. So it's got like some really nice pinups in the back. It's only one issue. There was another issue. I don't know if it came out before or after this, published from Kamiko, I think it is. And this is like Supergirl, if you will. She's got powers. She's beautiful. She goes to rescue a girl that's committing suicide, and she's basically committing suicide because of her looks, like the way people treat her. She fell in love with somebody. She was treated bad. And she gets saved, and she's like, why did you save me? You know, like, and she starts spewing out like all kinds of stuff. And then there's a flashback of her origin where she's a nurse at a hospital, and they're trying to get a kid a transplant. And this, she brings this kid like all these sport photography, like Sports Illustrated swimsuit issues. This kid, if he doesn't get a transplant, he's going to die. And he has posters of all these bikini women all over his hospital room. And there's a lightning storm, and she gets involved, like she's out on the streets and there's an accident. So being the nurse that she is, she goes to try to help. She helps pull the man out of the car. And the guy's like, my son in there. He's just a little kid. You got to save him. And they try to save him, but he's dead. And she convinces the father to be a transplant person. And then they take the transplant to the kid that's dying, and they're doing surgery, and the power goes out. And then also the backup generator goes out. So the nurse actually goes to the basement, and during the lightning storm, when she gets the lever of the backup power supply, she gets electrocuted. And that's when she changes into Flaxen. So it kind of gives her origin story. And then it's just like her saving this woman and telling her story of, you know, I know where you're coming from, and I know why you don't like the way you look and all this stuff. And then you read the backstory. So this Susie Flaxen, it actually has a picture of her as a dental assistant, and it's incredible, the transformation. I mean, if you see what happens, she had a kid, and she was this nurse-like person. And then she got into like muscle and fitness and started doing like stuff to lower her weight and then makeup and all this stuff. And she submitted her stuff to Playboy, and Playboy accepted her not as a Playboy bunny, but as like a spotlight on nurses. You know, like here's the nurse, and this is what she looks like naked, right?
Right.
And then girls
of college, they used to do, I remember.
Yeah. And then she became popular. Like, I mean, she said it almost sounds like she became like obsessed with being in Playboy. Like they said that they literally told her she's too fat to actually be a centerfold. So she like dropped her weight like significantly, and then did become a centerfold, which is very interesting, and then did a couple of things. And then she started briefing women on how to look. I don't know if that's a positive thing to do, is make women starve themselves and work themselves out to get in Playboy, but That's kind of
I
what
would
she
say no.
That's what she did, right?
Yeah.
The interesting thing is this thing had a centerpiece in it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. So it had pictures of her as Flaxen and also pictures of her in a bikini. But what my copy had was very fascinating, and I don't think this came with a Dark Horse comic book, but it actually has the Playboy thing cut out. Like
what?
This guy, whoever owned this comic, went into Playboy and cut out her picture. And it on the back, it actually has pictures of Flaxen, so it's like the Playboy article had her in there. So I wish you could see this because it's pretty incredible. But my copy has this. I don't think the Dark Horse copy will have it, but it has a nude shot of her. And then the back of it looks like it's cut out of a Playboy magazine. Like the material is so different. So I guess that guy became fascinated with comic books about Playboy models because I found these two comics in his box, Galaxina and Flaxen, and they both had Playboy to thank for it. But it was really quite enlightening. The comic book itself was interesting. It was well told, well drawn, but there was like nothing magical about it. Like it was pretty much her convincing a woman not to kill herself. So it was kind of like her own story and turning herself into a superhero.
Yeah, I just looked it up when you were talking about it, and it looks like Caliber did one drawn by Brian Michael Bendis in 95. Is like
yeah,
a
I saw that. And, yeah.
Yeah. So weird. Like, yeah. Of all the things to, like, do another issue of, why would you do some random one-off about, like, a model who turns into a superhero that only lasted an issue? And it's not even the same creative people.
No.
Yeah, it's weird.
This is Mark Evanier, so.
Yeah, that one was Hudnall and BMB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good pickup for sure.
Pretty
surprising.
Covered.
Yeah, you ought to see the Sergio Aragonés. I'll probably post them on Twitter, the pinups.
Cool.
I'll post the centerpiece so you can see what she looks like. The back cover actually has her modeling on a rock. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. I love finding comic books that have some kind of backstory for sure.
Yeah.
And these are two gems, like
I'll say you
who would have known?
Two gold mines today.
Yeah, two gold mines just randomly picking through. Yeah. And like the guy at the comic shop is like, nobody's gonna want this crap. You should look through it. Cause he knows that I don't want like Marvel or DC. I have all that. So
right.
It's like, he knows
he
that
needs
like
you and Kirk to hit him up once a week and he'll be good.
Yeah, he's like, so I got a box of crap you want to look through it? and I'm like, perfect. My eyes light up. You mean you mean crap that's not as old and not Marvel and DC? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah, I want to look through it.
Yeah.
And I picked a bunch of other stuff out of there.
Very cool.
I spent another $80 on. On a lot of crap. Crap that nobody wants.
For taking it home.
Well, I mean, I want that Fat Ninja. Like, I love comic books. I love history of comic books, and I love why they exist and why people put them together. And, yeah, I would love to have every comic book, but.
I was just going to say, there really is not a comic book that you would not want.
Yeah. These were just gems because they not only were comic books that were well drawn and decent stories, but they had some backstory to it that and a link I would have never guessed. And then my copy was even special because whoever owned it said, I'm going to go get my copy of Playboy and cut a picture of her out and drop it right in the centerfold. I'm like, yeah. So if anybody listens to this show, which is probably just you guys, but if anybody listens
well,
to this
listen
show,
anymore,
it gets a
I'm
copy of Flaxen, then I want to know if there's a Playboy cutout in there. I don't think there would be if it was Dark Horse.
I wouldn't think so either.
So I just got a special copy.
Yes.
You never know what you're going to find in those back issue bins.
Yeah, you never know.
The other movie that I watched was El Dorado.
El Dorado.
Robert Mitchum?
Yep. So that was the connection this time, was Robert Mitchum. This is from 1966. It's a Western, as you might guess, directed by Howard Hawks. In addition to Mitchum, it also, the other, the other lead is John Wayne. It also has a quite young James Caan. I wonder how young he was. He was 26 in this. Ed Asner is in it as well, actually. Mitchum plays the sheriff, J.P. Hara, and John Wayne is Cole Thornton, who's a gun for hire. And it starts off with Hara confronting Thornton about the fact that Thornton's taken on a job from a wealthy landowner named Bart Jason. And Jason is played by Ed Asner. So the sheriff tells Thornton that Jason is actually trying to force a honest family called the McDonald's off of their land. So basically he's giving them the lowdown. Hey, the job that you just took on is, you know, a corrupt dude trying to bully some honest people. So we find out that Thornton, even though he's gun for hire, he has some morals, because he agrees to turn down the job and heads out to Jason's ranch to tell him about this, or tell him he's not taking the job. But in the meantime, the McDonald family have heard that Thornton's arrived in town, and so they start to prepare for the fact that Thornton might be coming after them on behalf of Jason. So they set up defenses, including the youngest son of the family is made a sentry to, you know, he's up like on a cliff face watching out for the approach of Thornton so that he can warn his family that he's coming. So Thornton, he goes and tells Jason, you know, that he's not taking the job and all that. He takes care of that. And I learned from this scene that there's really no good way to back up on a horse and still look tough. Because through the whole scene, Wayne is acting real tough and, you know, turned down the job. And there's some challenge to the fact that he's turning down the job. Some of Jason's men, you know, one start to get close to his horse where his rifle's slung, and he stops him from doing that. He, you know, says something like, you know, you might reach that gun, but you might want to talk to your boss about that, because your boss will be dead before I hit the ground. So all that, you know, but apparently to back up in a horse, you just kind of shimmy it backwards, you know. And he wants to do that because he doesn't want to turn his back to the men, you know. But it just looks comical if you look up somebody backing up a horse, you know. the badass, it's hard to do that and look badass. It might be possible, but anyway, so the young McDonald boy, he falls asleep at his post. He's woken suddenly when Thornton's passing and takes a shot at him. And on reflex, Thornton fires back at him and hits Luke, the boy's name's Luke, in the stomach. So Thorne goes up to see the boy and what happened, and they're talking, and the boy thinks that, you know, he's been shot in the gut. He thinks that he's dead, basically, that it's a fatal wound. We hear a gunshot off camera as the boy kills himself. So Thornton actually takes the boy's body on his horse, slung over his horse, to the McDonald family, and to tell him what happened. And the only McDonald daughter, her name's Joey, and she is sort of a tomboy. She takes off before she can hear the truth of what happens. She just gets upset to see this gun for hire strolling into the grounds with the dead body of her brother. So she sneaks off and lays in ambush. So she doesn't hear the whole explanation of what happened. And when Thornton goes to leave, she shoots him, and he gets, and the bullet lodges in his back near his spine. So basically the local doctor is just like a small town, you know, Western doctor, doesn't have the ability to remove it. Just kind of has to have this bullet stuck in his body. So I was kind of impressed at this point by how much had happened in the film. You know, we're not really even at the halfway point at this. And the film jumps forward 6 months. We're in a different town in a saloon. And this is where James Caan's character comes in. His real name is Alan Bordillon Trehearne, which is, they make a joke of that throughout the film. Whenever he tells somebody his full name, they're quite pleased to find out that he has a nickname, Mississippi, and they're quite happy to just call him that instead. So Mississippi, he comes in, he's confronts and kills the member of this gang in town that was one of a few men who killed his foster father, this guy named Johnny Diamond. And Thornton's there in the saloon and witnesses this happen. He steps in to stop the retaliation against Mississippi. And it turns out that the kind of gang leader or employer of these other dudes is this guy, McLeod, who is also like, there's basically, you know, like in Westerns, it's always about the fastest gunslingers, you know, and it's kind of established that the three fastest gunmen in the West are the sheriff of El Dorado, Thornton, and the third is this McLeod gang leader guy. So he tries to hire Thornton because he's taken, since Thornton turned Jason down, Jason has now hired this McLeod guy. So he's this McLeod guy. He's planning to head out to El Dorado soon. Apparently, this is where Thornton learns that in the 6 months that's passed, Sheriff Hera has become a drunk. He got infatuated with a girl, and she ended up running out on him, and he's just soaking it up now. So that's where, obviously Thornton turns down the offer, and that's where, but we've established our, you know, threat with McLeod, knowing that he's good with the gun too. So Mississippi ends up kind of hooking up with Thornton. And I don't know if this film establishes this trope or if if it was already established, but I've definitely seen it referenced in a lot of references, westerns since. Where Mississippi, he has like a different kind of hat. You know, he doesn't have a western hat. He has kind of, it's not a bowler, but it's kind of like that. And the hat's mentioned quite a few times and made jokes of, like, the, you know, there's, I think it's Joey or one of the other females in the film where she's like comments that he looks a lot better once he took his hat off and that kind of thing. And he's also like real bad with guns. So he, when he kills the guy in the saloon, there's a thing made of that where he's like, well, what are you going to do? You're not, you know, you're not holstered. And he reaches behind him, pulls a knife out from his collar, and he's real good with, you know, so real good with knives. And I feel like it's kind of come a thing where there's like, there's always that part of the gang that's got the weird hat and is like, has some like quirky ability, like he's good with knives or some other kind of weapon.
Yeah.
I don't know if that comes from this, but it's definitely an early example of it. But the thing with Mississippi being bad with guns is pretty amusing, because early on, like right when him and Thornton decide to travel it together back to El Dorado, they stop at this place that Thornton knows, and he gets him a sawed-off shotgun. Because he's like, well, you can't hit anything, but this will give you a better chance of connecting, you know. And even with that, he's not that great with the sawed-off shotgun. so anyway, you know, I won't go all the way to the end of the film, but when they get back, there's the sheriff, sure enough, is not, you know, he's straight up alcoholic, you know, at this point. And you know, he, for the next like 20, 30 minutes of the film, he's soaking wet because Thornton wakes him up by dumping a bucket of water all over him. He's just sleeping it off in a jail cell, in his own jail cell. And his deputy is kind of running things. His deputy's like the kind of like the old Coop character for the film. It's kind of like old guy that's kind of funny acting. And so it is kind of interesting, the confrontation from there, where so Thornton's injury starts acting up. So he, the bullet's pressing on his spine. So he has random bouts of paralysis in his gun arm that he has to deal with. And the sheriff is drunk and they're trying to dry him out. Mississippi makes this concoction. I wish I had a list of all, because he says all the things that are in it, including Ipecac. And it's just, I think it would actually kill somebody. but it's funny what all the stuff that he puts in this stuff. And they force that down his throat. And it not only sobers him up, but it makes it so that if he takes a drink, he gets immediately violently ill. But he's a broken man for a while. And, you know, there's a scene where he tries to get his shit back together and he gets laughed at by the villains and stuff. And I enjoyed that aspect of it too, kind of like broken down, you know, handicapped men trying to come up with a plan that they can work around these limitations when the one that they're up against is, if not as good, almost as good as them with the gun. So it has a pretty good resolution. I will say one word of warning. There is a scene towards the end where James Caan's character, there's an instance of awful racism where he imitates a Chinese person in a lot of the stereotypical ways that you might imagine, which is something that you can kind of run into in older American films. It's pretty egregious. It only lasts for 30 seconds or so. But overall, I would say that it was a pretty solid one. It was up there in one of the better Westerns I've seen, I think. Mitchum, I'm not like a big John Wayne guy or something, like, you know, I don't avoid him, but I don't seek him out. But I like Robert Mitchum a lot, as I was saying last time. And I thought he was good in this with, you know, especially when it comes to the point where he's having to act out the consequences of his drinking and trying to overcome that. It does. I'll say one other thing. It does kind of like, which was not surprising to me. You know, I think at the end of the film, he takes a drink with, might be with the deputy or somebody else. And it was kind of in the context, it's like, well, you know, I'm over that now. I can have a drink again. and it wasn't like, I don't think it was meant to sort of like imply that he was going to end up with problems again in the future. I think it was more like written with the understanding, like, that's just the thing that men go through sometimes. And, you know, I don't think they were really thinking about the actual disease of alcoholism and that, you know, right. Or trying to say something about that. But I did think that was something that like also kind of reflected the time that this was made. Because otherwise I thought that his depiction of like his drunkenness and the actual acting of it was good. The writing around it was probably not to a modern sensibility. Yeah, pretty good Western overall.
Sounds it. Cool. All right, well, I'll do my last one. Then we can be done for the day. So this one that I'm going to do now is the first. I think I had already dipped my toe into the toys, but this was my first G.I. Joe comic book. G.I. Joe Real American Hero, number 5 from 1982. Of course, Larry Hama as the writer and Don Perlin as the artist.
Did you get the new one, by the way?
Of course I did, Mike.
From Image? Yeah. I haven't read it yet, but that's on my to-read pile. So.
It's a special 301st issue.
Yeah, my DCBS is coming today, supposedly, so right. I should have that.
Yeah, that actually getting it last week. And I got the facsimile edition of number 1 too.
Me too.
And kind of got me back into like, oh, you know, this was really cool. And of course, you know, 10 years old at the time, and like it was just such a I enjoyed it so much, and very excited that it's coming out again through Image. I think we're going to see a lot of great things with, you know, Kirkman.
I think I actually think the stuff, I'm so glad he kept Larry Hama doing the original series. That's what I cared about.
Me too. And I absolutely love the fact that, and I'm not surprised just with like some of the stuff that I've heard him say in the past before. He definitely has a lot of respect for a lot of the older stuff, and just in general, like older comics. And the fact that, you know, they're going to do their own thing too with like that Duke and the Cobra Commander miniseries starting. And then I'm sure they're going to launch a G.I. Joe series that kind of is part of that Energon universe. But I was so happy as well, Mike, that they're letting
continue the story. And yeah.
I was telling Stacy, you know, she didn't care about any of this stuff, but you know, I'm like, Larry Hama started that made us with the G.I. Joe. We, you know, no way he was involved in like writing their bios on the back of those of the action figure cards and stuff like that. And like the fact that he started writing this, and now it's gone from, you know, I know he didn't do anything with Devil's Due, but it, you know, it went from Marvel and then IDW started. And okay, we're gonna pick this up again, right, with 155, and now, you know, Kirkman with Image saying, yeah, we're gonna keep going. That's it's awesome. It's so fabulous. So this was my first experience with the comic book shortly after it came out. And then I went back and I picked up what I had missed. But yeah, this was cool. This starts out right in the pit, you know, where the G.I. Joe Command Center is, you know, underground. And got a few of the guys. It's Clutch and Steeler and I think Breaker. They're washing and making the Mobat, the tank, all sparkly, because it turns out they're going to be in a General Flag has decided they're going to put that the Mobat in a parade. The point of it being that it's very sophisticated on the inside, but from the outside it looks like just a normal tank, and they actually want to show, like, okay, you know, you don't have to worry about us using this in mission. Just look like a normal tank, you know, to the, on the outside, nobody knows how special it is. Yeah, but it's kind of funny because Scarlett's there, and she's like, I really don't understand the fascination of getting all this, you know, getting this whole thing sparkling clean. She's like, I think it looks best when you can't see it, when it's camouflaged and laying heavy fire. And so the guys take the opportunity of giving her a tour of the inside of the Mobat because, you know, even though she's in G.I. Joe, she is a woman, so she doesn't know about any of this stuff that the Mobat can do. So Clutch and Steeler and Breaker all go through very, very, very specifically all the stuff that this thing can do. And she acts like she doesn't know about any of this stuff, which is a little funny. But again, this was the 80s. So after this, they go on to explain that, you know, that this information about the Mobat being in this parade is highly classified. And as a matter of fact, they're not, you know, they're not advising the higher ups. Flag's not advising the higher ups through a phone call or or electronic information at all. It actually is having a courier hand deliver the information. So then it picks up, of course, the courier, and the courier is going through a metal detector at LaGuardia Airport, and you see the lady that's actually running the metal detector, it actually has an X-ray in it too, and you see her grab like the film that comes from the X-ray. She drops it off to a porter, and the porter drops it off to a cab driver, and the cab driver hands it off to a doorman, and the doorman goes upstairs and hands it off to a lady in one of the apartments, and the lady in the apartment opens up her back room. And it's a entire secretive Cobra command center. So she hands it off there, and they start looking through it. They're like, oh, we hit the jackpot. You know, this special tank's going to be out there. This is our chance to try to take it. So a Cobra courier goes running out underground through a sewer system and goes and meets Cobra commander and Baroness. And the Cobra commander is extremely excited about this opportunity to get the Mobat. So now it's the day of the parade, and we're in New York City on Fifth Avenue, and there's marching bands and everything else. And General Flag is there, and he's telling all the higher ups, like, yeah, we're going to have some artillery coming soon. So they're very excited about that. And we have Steeler and again, Clutch and Breaker, all there, and they're in the Mobat, and they see that Steeler actually is actually using the electronic gun sight. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? You have it on full magnification. We don't even have any live ammo in here. And he says, let's just say that I'm fulfilling the obligation of the military command to keep abreast of the rear guard situation. And he has the scope like really, really magnified on one of the majorettes in front of him, on her ass. So he's just staring at that the whole ride. They have to stop the parade temporarily because the cross-time traffic needs to get through, parade or no parade. And as soon as they stop, all of a sudden all these band members that were in front of them, and they roll out this this big banner on both sides of the Wombat. Like, oh, that's weird. What are they? Why are they doing that? And then all the crowd think that they're going to make the tank disappear. And I'm like, wait a minute, that float, the Navy float from behind us is still moving. They seem to be asleep. They didn't realize we're at a stop. And they see the big, huge steel doors on the bottom of this float open up. And like, oh my God, they're trying to trap us in there. So they figure that out and then they step on the gas. Now, of course, there's no place to go. So they end up going on the sidewalk and they start using the amplified speaker system that they announced that they had, saying, get out of the way, get out of the way, you know, tank coming through. Now you see all of the people in the band, they're breaking into their big bass drums and, you know, breaking into their tubas and stuff and putting together all these weapons and stuff. So, of course, you know, they're all part of it. And they start chasing them down. As I said, the tank is going down the sidewalk now and makes a turn on a Madison Avenue before all these band members with artillery come running after them, and they seem to have lost them. What they ended up doing was they went to a construction site and kind of went behind a fence. So they're looking all over the place for them. They're like, check the parking garages, check the loading areas. But we only have so much time before, you know, they actually, you know, authorities actually come. You know, there's reports of, you know, an entire marching band with guns. So now Breaker's checking out like everything on the radio side, and he's like, you know, there's a guy with a communication backpack on, and he's talking to Cobra Commander himself. He's like, that rig can't be that powerful. It's only good for a few miles. So Cobra Commander has to be somewhere close by where he's monitoring and giving them the orders. And so now they're excited. They're like, we went from, you know, running away to now we're going to play offense. We got to track down Cobra Commander himself. So we got to act fast because they only have so much time to find us. And if they don't, they're going to just disappear. So we got to lure them out. So sure enough, that's what they do. They start pinging a signal that they know that Cobra Command are going to be able to actually pinpoint. So Cobra Commander and his station is saying, oh, you know, we've got sensors and it's coming from Central Park. So, you know, get out there and get them. So they all go run into Central Park, and they're like, there's nothing here. And now they're in the lake. They're around the lake, and they're looking, and there's just a rowboat out there. Like, what is going on? And sure enough, the Mobat's underwater. It comes treading out onto shore, and they're like, take cover. And Cobra Commander's like, you fools, they can't have live ammo. And they're like, go back again. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. So they start taking their bazookas out to take it out. And the cannon of the Mobat raises up and bam, so it freaks them all out, and they Steeler pops his head out and says that was a warning shot. Next one's going to turn you into a lingering red mist unless you drop your weapons. So they all drop their weapons and they surrender. And then the next thing you know, the parade's starting up again, and you've got the Mobat now all dirty and disgusting looking, with all the marching band in front of them in custody. And all of the generals are like now questioning Flag, like, what is this? This is a disgrace. Look at that tank. It's covered with mud. And why is the marching band in custody? They don't know what's going on. They're like, oh, I'm sure Flag has an explanation for that. And then Breakers says, oh my God, I've got heavy electronic activity in our immediate vicinity. I know where Cobra Commander is. So he tells Steeler and Clutch to jump out, and Clutch tells Steeler and Breaker to jump out and keep, you know, keep a guard on that marching band. And the tank turns and starts going right to the stand where all the generals, including General Flag, are watching from up high. And it's coming right at them. And Flag's like, what is going on? He pulls out his pistol. All the rest of the generals are like making a break for it, jumping off the thing and everything else. And Flag's ordering Clutch to stop, and Clutch's like, I can't hear you, sir. I got a tank in my ear. So he's going straight, and Flag just jumps off just in the nick of time, and Crash goes right through it. And sure enough, all of the Cobra, there's all these Cobra people, including Cobra Commander and Baroness, that were actually underneath the stand itself, and that's where they were doing it. So Cobra Commander pulls out his pistol. Justice Flag pulls out his own, and they start shooting, and Cobra Commander actually grazes Flag on the side of the head, and they manage to run off and escape. Clutch was actually stuck underneath the whole arrangement there when it came crashing down on top of the Wombat, and he couldn't get out. He ends up commending Clutch for trying to get a Cobra Commander, even though they failed. And they're patching Flag head back up. You know what? He's like, the only question I have is, how did you shoot the cannon? We had no shells in the thing. He's like, the power of suggestion. We cranked up the juice on the amplification system and patched the mic to the external speakers. And then you see Clutch pop. He was chewing gum the whole time. He blows a bubble, and they pop it. And it goes, blam! Son of a gun. And that's the end of the issue. And that's all I got.
I need to revisit those early G.I. Joes. I haven't read those in years.
They're just so much fun.
Yeah.
They really are.
I think my first issue was number 12, but a pretty early issue I had was number 6, the one right after that, where it's them and the October Guard.
Those were good. I got a few of the issues, and then, like it was at those convenience stores, I had got 5, 6, 7. They disappeared from the rack.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden number 12 showed up, and that was around. And then I got a couple of them. And then that was around the time that I went to the, started going to the comic book store. So from that point on, I just kept buying until like almost issue 80. And then I just totally dropped off on that altogether. Yeah. I don't have anything from like 78 or 79 up.
Did you pick up any of the, trades from IDW?
I have one trade digitally on my Kindle, but it's probably, it's volume one. With the intention I was going to keep getting them, and I never did. So this is probably all issues that I already own.
Right.
I'm hoping that Kirkman now is going to be doing some stuff.
I'm betting he will.
Oh, yeah. He's got to be, right? So yeah. I'll get the full collection.
Because I've looked to go back and try to pick some of those up because they're out of print, and they can get pretty pricey, those and the Transformer ones.
I have the hardcovers, but the hardcover is never finished.
Yeah, that's right.
IDW did like hardcovers, and then they did the softcovers, and the softcovers were always ahead. And they finished the series in soft cover, but they never finished the hardcover.
Oh, wow. Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, so G.I. Joe, I want to get – I hope they do a collection. I want to get those. I think Joe, you, me, and Mike are probably all getting ROM and Micronauts when, as those are being solicited. Transformers, I don't know. I just don't have any interest in – getting it. I mean, I bought a bunch of Transformers when it's coming out in the at the time.
Right.
Right from number one through, I don't know, maybe the 30s or the 40s, but that was it. But I don't know. I just don't have that same.
I'm the interest. Same way. I try and I dip my toe in, but I just don't get into it.
Yeah.
I loved Ratchet. He was there. It's almost, if you're reading Star Wars, he was like their Lobot. You're like, why have they adopted this character and why is it in every issue? you know what I mean? I like Charles Soule, but man, he is really obsessed with Lobot and Lando. They're like the main storyline in the series right now.
Oh, wow. And, I dropped buying physical, but I'm reading them on digitally, but obviously I'm quite a bit behind.
I like Lando a lot. Lobot, I'm like, I don't get it. He's just a guy with like a piece of cyborg in his head. But whatever.
Everybody
has a weird character they like.
Yeah. I can't believe I came back in, because I was like, I miss it. I came back in. I had 2 months of $3.99, and then they all went to $4.99.
Yep.
And now I'm at the point, how do I...
What are you going to do?
Well, I'm tempted... I get those from the LCS too. So I'm tempted
you're
to
paying
tell.
Full price.
No, not full price. I get 25% off.
Oh,
there.
Okay. Well, that's nice.
But
the 25% is pretty good for a LCS.
Yeah, for a store, yeah.
Yeah, he's not too smart of a business guy, so. I don't mean to say that, but like he gives, I think you only have to get like 11 books or higher to get 25%. Yeah. That's it's not hard to get 11 comics.
No,
it's not. I could do that.
Yeah, my LCS only does 10%. They might give me a tiny bit more because I've been there for now 40 years, but it's not 25%.
Yeah, it's
that might give me a
too
little,
much,
you know,
in my opinion, for a brick and mortar store. Like, yeah, you're paying rent and you're paying all that stuff, and that's
and your volume
a little
isn't
too high.
Like a TCPS is, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, that. Well, he knows I buy like the majority of my stuff for discount because he knows that I left him entirely when he told me he was going to close too. So.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to talk before. I know we're running long, but I just wanted to mention, Mike, because we've talked about this before, and I really, especially this time around with the news previews that's out, I've been going through it, really looking and stuff. And when it's just a miscellaneous new comic coming out, and I'm not talking necessarily like an established hero like a DC or a Marvel or something like that, but I'm really being picky. If I see a $4.99, I'm pretty much, unless it's like Valiant, or if it's a much bit higher page count, I'm not buying. I'm just not buying them anymore.
I just finished reading this.
More $5.99s too.
This morning I read this Lipstick Klika, which is I wanted to get it because it's like Vampire Cholas, right? Mm-hmm. But I looked at the cover. And it was $5.99, and I was like, why did I order this? Like,
yeah.
I read it, and I said, well, you know what? If this was $3.99, I'd continue. Because it's $5.99, I ain't going to continue. And it was only 24 pages. I did a page count.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, and I think with the 24 pages, it had an infold picture, too. So, I don't know. I was like, man.
Yeah. There was quite a few in this new... And this new previews, I'm going
well, this
to
last
like, you
previews,
know what? I probably
I was...
would get this, but I'm not getting it because it's $4.59. I'm just not buying them.
I think I was less than $800 this last time, which is incredible for me because I'm usually four digits.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I was like, you know what? I'd rather spend my money on saving for a key appearance or something, personally.
Yeah.
Because at least there's return on investment, and it's something I really want. Like, I know I want it.
Yeah, you really want it.
Yeah. And then if I could go to a dollar bin and get a bunch of crap like I've been getting, I'd rather get that. You know, like.
But see, the thing is, look at what you're paying for those, and you're still getting a ton of enjoyment out of it.
Oh, hell yeah.
You probably have a longer read, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well,
like,
there's
like,
no doubt about that.
These two books were, like, 100% better than Lipstick Klika. Like,
yeah,
I didn't even know it was continued from another series either. So I gotta read the solicits a little more, you know, do that kind of stuff.
I saw Massive has that they have the Fog, 40 years after the events, right? I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. And then I'm looking, 24 pages, $4.99. Nope, I'm out. So
I think it's one of those things, maybe wait for the trade, because I picked up some trades from Vault on stuff I'd heard good stuff about. And I liked Hollow Heart by Paul Allure, but you got to figure that would have been, I spent maybe $10 on it for sale. Mm-hmm. And originally those issues were probably $4.99 a piece. That's what, $30. And even at a discount, that's like $20. I mean, you know, there's if you hear something good about it in picking up a trade, I'm getting more and more that way with the indie stuff.
Well, the indie stuff,
I told you
I'm,
with that
I'm
unnatural
doing...
order, I got that one for free, right? They just shoved it in there. I'm like, this is really good, but you know what? I'll just wait for it to finish and I'll get it on.
Yeah. Trade. Yeah. I like when Dynamite
you
has
spent
something
a lot.
I like.
Did you place your order already, Joe?
Me?
For your
for DCBS or for the Unnatural Order issues?
DCBS.
Yeah, I did. I'm right around 300. Yeah, I'm right around 300, which is high for me.
Yeah, you're spending a lot. Whereas mine, this is the brand new one, Mike. So you probably haven't placed the order for the new previews. But I took a look and I because I wanted to see. Cause I'm like, I don't think there's a lot. And sure enough, it's like $230. It's the cheapest it's been in years for
well,
me.
Well, you know what? Yeah, like a lot of these minis and stuff, like Monica Laveau Photon and.
Mm-hmm. I'm not buying them anymore. Are you?
I'm not buying them anymore. Yeah, I'm just reading them on the. I'm reading them on the app.
Same.
So well, what I've
like,
done, Rob,
I'm keeping
too,
caught
is...
up on there, and I'm perfectly happy just reading the story and not having the physical copy because they tend to be stories that I don't want to revisit anyway. Like
I agreed. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with them, and I'm enjoying them, but
you don't need to own them.
I don't need to own them, and I'm Rob, gonna. I'm more critical too. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say one thing that I think has made mine bigger, Rob, is I've added some of the stuff that I probably would have skipped in the past because I'm being a little bit pickier with single issues. So I've added more high-end items. Mm. So like the Fantagraphics reprints of like the Disney Gummy Bears thing is like a $30 book. And I saw that Spider Girl, which is something I've been meaning to read for years, is getting
a
nice collection.
Oh my god! That, you're gonna be so happy with that. That is so
that's like a $30 book.
That is Franz and DeFalco. Oh my god! Yeah. That's so good.
And I love the Nate Edmonds Black Widow. I just don't have all the issues, and I'm like having a nice collection of that. So what has happened? I've cut back some on the issues at times, but I've added more of the upper end stuff. I did end up dropping that Valiant's, what was it? Valentine's one. I feel like I get burned every time DC does one of those or Marvel does one. I spend $10. It's got one story I like, and then I'm mad I spent $10. So I ended
Which
up dropping
one?
It.
Which one?
The Valentine's one.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I've dropped all the Marvel and DC ones because they're $10 each.
Yeah,
but
too much,
I am going to give. Now that they're with Alien, I am going to give them a chance. Okay. So I did order that one.
I did order the catch-up trade of EXO though.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. And I'm planning on picking up the first catch-up trade that's coming out next week. I'm going to order it from my comic shop.
I'm still all in Valiant. That means I get every trade, every hardcover, and every book. So and I'm not going to stop either. But
yeah.
That's one company I just won't. I'm not gonna cut. Like it's just.
Well, the nice thing about DCBS too is I can keep tweaking it right up into the end of the month. So yeah. I may drop some more stuff, but yeah, I've got it down to at least a manageable price because I think my initial order was like gonna be close to 400, and I'm like I don't want to spend that much money.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
Mike,
I dropped
a
bunch
very
of single
Valentine's.
Issues.
That very Valentine's special is like $12.99 with a discount. Still $8.44, so it's a pricey book, but
I just don't trust it because I've bought too many of those from DC where I've been mad that I've bought them.
Yeah, I'm just hungry for Valiant stories, and they're gonna touch a lot of different Valiant characters that we probably haven't seen in print at this point in now years because they're publishing one comic a month, you know. So I'm like, oh, this might be a good opportunity to just. You know, see what their take is on a lot of different
Alien decided to do like Valiant still exists. They're just publishing it through another publishing house.
Yep.
They're just deciding to come back at a very, very bad time. Like to right now is a horrible time to put out a new number one.
Oh yeah.
The market is just tanking.
One weird thing, Mike, when you do your DCBS order is, and maybe they'll have fixed it by the time you put it through, not all the Free Comic Book Day books popped up because I wanted to make sure to order all the kind of weird niche ones like Gatchaman and Flash Gordon. And
what's
and
up with that?
And they weren't on there.
Yeah, and, Flash Gordon is not on there.
And neither was Gatchaman because I was going to do both
of
those.
Who's doing Flash Gordon?
I think they're both Massive or Mad Cave. one
Mad
or the
Cave.
Other.
They're Mad Cave. I know.
Mad Cave. Yeah, they weren't on there because I was going to order both of those.
Yep.
And
Not even listed, Mike.
Yeah, because I ordered that weird Popeye one.
Well, there's a Popeye one?
Yeah, it's like an anime-looking Popeye. It looks
What is that? Who's publishing that?
I don't remember.
That one I don't remember at all.
Yeah, but let's see. Hold on, I got my order up. I can tell you which ones I got. I got I don't have them in order. Doggone me. Oh yeah, I do. I because I only order enough to get six free, so I have to.
I got 13.
Nice job.
Well, I think Mike probably gets.
Gets one of each. Yeah. So I got Conan, the Energon Universe one, I Lie Popeye, Johnny Quest, and the Valiants, and the Atlas one from Fantagraphics.
Is Johnny Quest being published through Dynamite, or who's doing
that?
I think Dynamite
got the Warner, just like they got the Disney stuff that Marvel doesn't want, they've got the Warner Brothers stuff that DC doesn't want. Yep. So, like, your Hanna-Barbera stuff and Thundercats are going to be at Dynamite now.
Yeah, I got to decide on Thundercats.
Bruh, the one thing I did find about talking about trade waiting, freaking Disney Dynamite stuff, or they have a 2-year wait on the trade, so I've gone back and ordered a bunch of those single issues.
Wow.
So, like, Scar won't get printed until 2025.
Why is that?
Because they want you to buy those single issues, man.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So I've gone back and ordered a bunch of those because I was going to trade weight on those too because Jack has been getting them and they have gorgeous artwork and he read one on our podcast.
Did you see Maleficent? That was really good.
That's one I've ordered. So my comic shop.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of story in it, but artistically it's beautiful. Like it's just gorgeous.
Well, buddies, I got to roll because I got to do a photo shoot for the family Christmas card.
Oh, nice. Woo! All right. You got to get gussied up.
I know. I got to eat and get a shower. So.
That's right.
Speaking of Burt Reynolds.
200 episodes.
It was. I'm so excited to be part of the gang. And I looked while we were on, and my first episode was in August of last year. So. I know I haven't been on as long, but I greatly appreciate being included, and it's been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here. I'm very, very grateful that you guys allowed me. Like, I guess, you know, I just joined you for one episode, and then you guys like, oh, yeah, why don't you just come along and hang out? So I definitely appreciate it. It's awesome to talk to you guys every few weeks.
I'm very
curious. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, guys. So, if I don't talk to you before, like if you guys want to get together one more time, let me know, or you guys could get together while I'm in Albuquerque. But might see you guys in the new year.
Yep. Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Take care. Have a good holiday, everybody.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye.